isn't it?
I move that we...
No, huh?
We have to come out. Move to come out of executive session.
Okay. A second.
Wait a minute. We have to mention the subjects. We've come out of executive session. We had two items we discussed.
Right.
Do we have a motion?
They moved to the second.
A motion?
Beverly, second.
Second to come out of executive session. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, passes unanimously.
No.
Okay.
Okay, now you're on the right.
Okay. The item we talked about concerning the personal issue was a performance review by counsel of our city manager, Roger LaDuke. And we had considerable discussion on that, and it was, I want to put forth what I think came out of our discussion is that we offer our city manager, this is merit increase we're talking about, of 3.5% to his current salary. We discuss different values, but we also discussed when looking over his performance and all the many things that we feel that where Aiken has improved and has been on the leadership in the state, really, on many of these items. And just to mention, the health program, wellness program, and many, many other things. The cooperation that Roger has fostered with the county, with the administrator of the county, and that's helped the councils to come together as well. So we could go on, and we have a record of that in a write-up that can be made as part of the record. But I ask that we have a motion and a second to approve a 3.5% increase.
So moved.
City manager?
So moved.
Do we
second.
Have that? Second, okay. If there's any discussion on that, we'll have that discussion now. Seeing no hands for discussion, show of hands, please, to approve the 3.5% increase for our city manager. Okay, passes unanimously. Very good. And with the end of that item, that discussion, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you
all. Very good.
The Parking Advisory Committee is comprised of citizens that attended the John Edwards information workshop, so they were informed as to what his study found and the recommendations that he made. They are not ADDA members, all of them, so this does comprise member and non-member citizens and business owners downtown. The area that we're looking at, the recommendation that John Edwards made was to have a two-hour limit in the crossway of Lawrence and Richland. The Parking Advisory Committee was concerned that perhaps doing that might shove people around to other areas in front of other businesses, and they would park all day. So, therefore, we decided to expand the area to include any area that had a storefront on it, Lawrence, Richland, Barnwell Park, Kane, and Pendleton, and then including the medians, as Roger said, on Lawrence and Richland. And this is kind of a little bit of a map that we've drawn. And I think, is that in the packet, Roger?
No, I did not have that.
Oh, okay.
It went out.
In addition, know that this is only a limited time. This would only be Monday through Friday and would go from 9 to 4. And some of our committee went out and actually walked around in the mornings to see what available spaces there were, because the problem seemed to be about 111 cars that were parking all day in front of the stores. And we found, I think this is in your letter, I mean in your packet, the letter states that we found approximately 100 plus spaces that were open about 8:30 or 9 in the morning. And then I went back again later and...
You have another minute.
Wow. Did I win? Okay. After the morning hour, when people started coming to work, it did go, drop to about 85 plus or minus spaces that still are underutilized. And this was all in a two-block area, and it was on the west side of Lawrence. We didn't even touch the east side looking on that side. But there are also places that we feel like are privately owned that possibly if more spaces were needed that the city could talk, this is another recommendation, could speak with those owners about maybe sharing to add some more parking also.
You ready for comments?
I'm ready. Not really, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, I've got real mixed emotions about going into this thing right now. Because of the facts that I, if I understand what I'm reading in the executive summary and my own surveys I've made, there are plenty of parking spaces that are available downtown. One of them I've mentioned several times, and you have that here, Lawrence to Pendleton on Barnwell. There must be 25 spaces there that are available every time I go down there. So the other thing that concerns me is that there's some wonderful recommendations here about letting people know where some of these places are. And I don't think, unless I've missed something, that we've done that in a big way before we start enforcing a two-hour limit.
Let me show you this. This was done, I found this in the records over in the ADDA office. Most of you know I've only been there a little over a year, but this is an issue that's been brought up, I think, before and been discussed for years.
Oh, yes.
And at some point, people were asked to let the customers have those spaces, to get the employees off. They even made, this is a sticker that says, I walk for downtown customers. They tried to do an incentive program. It hasn't worked. Without some kind of enforcement or ordinance that will cause them or make these long-term parkers to move to these areas we're talking about, the track record says it's not going to happen.
But again, my point is that the study doesn't tell me that we've got a major problem. It talks about all these empty spaces that are there. I never have a problem. Maybe I'm the only one.
Well, committee.
Huh?
I was at the committee meeting with ADDA, and the downtown merchants at that meeting certainly felt there was a major problem. A couple of them mentioned cars parked in front of their specific stores all day long, never move.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see the store, you can't see the display, you can't do anything with the two big SUVs parked in front of your store. And I frankly shop downtown all the time, and during the lunch hour I find it almost impossible to find a space. But that's not what I was worried about. What I was worried about is what these merchants were saying at the meeting and how they don't want to go through a Christmas season again looking at 111 people parking all day long on Main Street in front of stores when we could be getting customers in and out of these stores.
Mm-hmm. How about, Jane, how about the other places that are indicated here, these other areas?
Well,
I don't think the city, I don't know the ADDA or the city for that matter, has done the job of communicating with some of these areas that you've listed here. Some of the banks, some of the other areas. I won't go through them. They're here on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
About working out an agreement that only a block from downtown.
Well, I think that we can certainly, I don't think it should take, we've been talking about this the 6 years that I've been on City Council, and I don't think it should take 6 years to do this. I think mm-hmm. in 2 days we could get out to all the merchants downtown a list of where their employees could park and what are the suggestions for that. I don't see why that has to, we've analyzed that and analyzed it and analyzed it again, and I don't see why it should take more than a day or two to get that to the merchants and the employees.
Well, I'll go along with whatever the majority priority wants to do, but I don't think that decision relates to the facts that I see here. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the problem is the storefronts that are getting blocked, the spaces that are there are available, but they're off that main track. And these people that are parking all day are not wanting to go there and won't move there unless there's an ordinance.
Do we know who these people are? Are these people employees of the store owners, or who are they? Do we know?
A lot of them are employees of store owners.
But they work at a different store from where they're parking.
Correct. And my understanding is people have actually went out and told them and asked them to move, and they have said no, and they said that they would go and talk with their owner, and they've gone to the store owners, and the store owners refused to do anything either.
Probably because if you have 111 people parking downtown all day long in front of a store different from where they work, it might be that we know that there is no store that employs 111 people. So I may work at Lionel Smith and I might park in front of the drugstore, but Lionel Smith's employees may be parking in front of, but the people at the drugstore may be parking in front of somebody else's store. So I think they might all be doing it just in front of somebody else's storefront. So that might answer why the store owners are unable to get cooperation from the employees.
Well, and I have heard that sometimes the owners have tried to enforce it with their employees, but then when the store next door isn't, then their employees are like, well, why should I park somewhere else?
But I do want to mention one other funny little thing. We were in McCormick, South Carolina, a couple weekends ago. They have two-hour parking. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, to answer a couple of questions.
It's everywhere.
Greenville does, too.
And there are a lot of towns that have done this, and it's worked. In fact, when you ask the people who have put it in force, like in my position, if there's been a problem, it's some of the store owners that complain, but the customers don't tend to complain. They don't mind at all. And even through this, when it first came up several months ago, we had more merchants that were a little concerned. We had no customers or anything coming and speaking to us. In fact, we had some that said, well, you know what you ought to do? You ought to limit the parking. And that came from a consumer.
A couple of years ago, Van Smith, who's out in the audience there, headed up a committee and went to the merchants to let them know the problem we had. And about 80% of them were very cooperative and agreed to have themselves and their employees park elsewhere. But there's always that small percentage of individuals that basically said, no, we're going to park where we want to. And so, unfortunately, what we're looking at tonight is not to the majority. It's because there is a minority that's out there that are not more or less playing fair with the rest of the merchants that are there. And they park in front of other places and tie up a lot of these parking spaces that could be made available to the merchants. So a lot of work went into this a couple of years ago when Van and his group went out there door to door, talked to people, showed maps where they could be parking. Surveys were done at that time. They were confirmed when this last survey was done, showing again that we have a small grouping of people that park there all day long. And so this is what would we feel would help with that concern. As far as enforcement would go, public safety will be having to monitor it. But I also believe that we'll have a lot of self-monitoring in the fact that we'll have merchants who will be looking out their window on a regular basis. And when they see cars that are parked there for a long period of time, they will let us know. But we will be doing some monitoring, and some of it will be done by the merchants themselves to help us.
I think although it's the minority that is causing the problem, the majority are upset with this minority, and they want something done about it. So this is, I feel like, the majority wanting some kind of time limit enforcement.
Well, I would also like to get some agreement as to when we're going to talk to these various facilities that have extra parking and try to work out something with them that are, again, listed here. Has that been approached as to how we're going to go about that? Who's going to do it? Should that be ADDA, or should that be the city?
Wade Brody. I'm on the Downtown Development Association Committee, and we've been working on this problem for 30 years, 40 years. And the problem is employee parking. To specifically answer your question, Mayor, we have been looking at areas and trying to identify them, privately owned parking. For instance, the region's facility, former operations facility, has a parking lot behind it that's not used at all. And we are trying to negotiate with the owner of that building to allow the city to use those spaces if the city would give them a tax letter once a year. There are other areas that the city may, if it's required, the city may have to lease some property for parking. But my feeling, and having worked on this for years and years and years, is that there's adequate space. I mean, you say there's adequate space out there. It's a matter of enforcement, getting employees to move to these off-street spaces which exist, and you know, they might have to walk two blocks. Mm-hmm. Getting back to procedure, at least twice in the last 30 years, spaces have been identified, maps have been made. As Roger pointed out, have talked to the employers. It worked for maybe a week, 2 weeks, and then they drift back. The city has gone to the extent during this period of time of when they identify spaces to say to property owners, you know, this space behind your building, we'll come in and blacktop it or grade it, and you know, these things have been done. Yeah. Just don't work without the enforcement, really.
Right.
I agree with you completely, Wade, and I can't believe we're going through this debate again. Sam was here, you were here, you asked for some sort of an idea whether if you went through all the work what we were going to do. I say let's go ahead and do it. That's
really, and it may create some problems, but we'll have to work around the problems. We can come back and change things.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted some assurance that we're working on these agreements with some of these places that do have some open spaces for parking.
We are.
And that would include our Red Cross building, as far as I'm concerned, as well. If we've got, you know, if we're this concerned about it, and I agree what the problem is, then we better take another look at our Red Cross building before we give that up as well, I think. But I appreciate what everybody's been doing on this. It has been going on for 30 years, 22 that I know of. And so let's do it.
Well, and one thing, too, Wade talked about this, and Carla did, and so did Van and the other owners. I mean, we're going to work with this. It's not set in stone. It's something that we want to get going, and then they're going to be hearing about it, I'm sure. And so, I mean, that's the attitude that we're taking. It's not that this is,
right,
you know, not like that.
I do want to say to Van that when I said Lionel Smith, it's because I always try to go to Lionel Smith, and there's never a parking space there. But I do want to say that we need to make sure that those businesses that are on Pendleton that came to us when we discussed this before, they were concerned about having their area marked for all-day parking because they need people to come and go as well. And we need to be very clear to them how we are going to work it so that their spaces in front of their businesses are not blocked all day long because they have customers and clients as well. And that was the one thing that I think we need to perhaps take a good look at when we assign those places for all-day parking.
I think that we have talked about this for a very, very long time. We need to try the two-hour parking signs. I travel to Greenville, to Columbia. When I see that two-hour parking, I know not to park there. I am an abuser of the parking across the street because it's easy for me to jump out of my car, run into my building, and you've got a lot of abusers over there. We had a meeting. There was a notice that went out today regarding folks parking on the street on Newberry Street and leaving that for not that we park in front of your your business at all. But we do park facing the Washington Root building. So we're all being more conscious of that. But it doesn't always stay on our mind. I mean, we start doing it and doing it the right way for about a month, and then we've forgotten, and I think everybody else has forgotten. We're back to our old habits again. But that two-hour parking serves as a reminder for all of us not to to park there and find other place. And the question was asked, where else can we park? Well, Chesterfield Street has ample parking. Not that all of us are good at parallel parking, but we can get there early enough that we don't have to parallel park. So, but there's ample parking we've discovered on Chesterfield Street and behind our building, too, with Regions parking as well. So.
Okay. We're in agreement?
Yeah. you're free to go, buddy.
If we could, so that staff could get moving forward on this, if council does not mind, I would like to add this to the agenda just to get your approval for staff to start moving forward with the two-hour parking and how that would be done. We'll discuss in our staff meeting tomorrow, but basically the actual time of when we would ticket someone would probably not be for another 2 or 3 months. We'd probably have warning tickets. We've got to notify the merchants as to what would be going on. And there'd be courtesy tickets for the first month or two. But I would like to go ahead and get your formal approval of it tonight if possible so we could take some action as quickly as possible on this.
Okay, why don't we add it under petitions and requests then?
I do have one question, Roger. When you give a $10 fine for parking over the two-hour limit, and they say, you know, paying $10 is worth it if I could park all day, are you going to mark that every two-hour period, or do they get just the one ticket for?
Those are some things we'll be discussing, but okay. I'm sure there'd be, if they got, let's say they put a ticket on the windshield for 2 hours, and then 2 hours later they were still there, there would be another
$10
every 2 hours.
Okay. We'll add that to the agenda then at the end. We've got a little bit of time here. It's unusual.
Roger, when you're doing this parking thing, can you make some space for motor bikes and smaller transportation, because there are quite a few downtown now.
We'll take a look at that.
Because I think if you encourage that, you may even open up some parking. I know that there's three of them that are parked in one area right now. In one parking space, there's three bikes.
Well, that's good.
Good point.
Yeah.
There'll probably be more over the years, too, won't there?
Well, if you get a DUI, then you should.
Gasoline keeps going up.
Really?
We'll wait just a couple of minutes. A couple of minutes before 7. And
does any council members have any appointments that they want to make the next time?
I do.
Let's take those now. It's a good idea. Go ahead, Leslie.
I have Mary Suber. On the arts, I think I've got an appointment for the arts, I believe. Nice, up here.
You have that right there, Mayor Suvin.
And what is the appointment going to be for the arts?
She's replacing Karen.
Okay, and as far as the performing arts category, she's
a good one.
How does she fit
Mary
into the...
Mary writes plays. She's an English teacher. She's okay. She fits the category, in other words.
Thank you. She's a good one. I'll put that down.
Yeah, she is. She's a hard worker.
Okay, good.
I have John Halpert renewing on the Environmental Committee.
Okay.
And Kay Bodenheimer on the...
Parks. Okay.
And Roger, I have Lynn Henry recommending reappointment for the Design Review Board. Please.
Okay. And if you saw at the very back of the packet, We have Charles Herbst, I believe that's the correct pronunciation, who will be recommended for the Design Review Board.
Okay. Roger, I'm going to reappoint Joan Bristol to the Park Commission and Bill Reynolds to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And there's another nomination form in there as well, did you see, besides Charles
Herbst? Yeah, there are two of them, yeah. Yeah. Peter?
Pete Sia.
Sia? Yes.
The other one that I want to reappoint is Leonardo Brooker to the Planning Commission.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Is that all? Okay. Yes, it is. Okay, let's get into a city council meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening to Aiken City Council meeting, November 26, 2007. We appreciate everyone being here. We always do, and appreciate the comments that we get from time to time on various issues. So we appreciate your support of the city and the city council and being here. If you would, and if you desire, stand with us for a prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
May we pray. Most gracious Heavenly Father, as we come to you today, we just come to you thanking you and praising you, Father, for all the many blessings that you've given to us. The blessings of this wonderful city in which we live. The blessings, Lord, of your love and mercy that you continue to pour out upon us, even though we're so undeserving of even the smallest. Father, we thank you for the citizens within our community and their willingness, Father, to volunteer and to step out to improve this community and make it a better place in which to live. Father, we just pray that as this meeting goes on tonight, that you would be with each one of us, Lord, as we participate in this meeting. Father, that you would give us clearness of mind. Father, that you would give us oneness of spirit. Father, just lead, guide, and direct in all the decisions that's made here tonight. And may they be decisions that will better our community, will strengthen our citizens. And Father, most of all, will honor and glorify you. Father, we ask these things in him whose name is above all names. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Yes, sir. I'd like to add, I guess it's under the petitions and requests, or I don't know. I'm understanding that tomorrow night the county council is considering hiring a firm to determine the location of the office building that they're proposing to build. I understand that they are thinking they need a minimum of 25 to 50 acres, that the initial space needs plans call for 1,000 parking spaces. And it sounds to me like every space that's being considered is on the edge of town, and I was told that it would either be land in the city or land immediately contiguous to the city. All the money that is available at this moment is $12 million from the 1% sales tax. But as a taxpayer, I'm concerned about the cost of this project, and as a city council person, I'm concerned because I thought towns learned 25 years ago that you don't take your major businesses and move them out to a bypass and think that the downtown is still going to stay active and viable, that you need real business downtown. I want to see legal offices stay downtown. I want to see restaurants there to serve the customers in those offices. Ancillary services to those offices are important to our downtown businesses, and I am very concerned that downtown Aiken space to which a lot of our citizens are able to walk is not being considered. And I think we need to get involved in this because I think it's incredibly important for Aiken.
Okay. Jane, I haven't read about that, but is this hiring a person, a consultant, to determine where it should be?
Well, it turns out they've already hired Fine and Deering to decide how much space they needed. That's where they got the 1,000 parking space business. They also determined that they should locate it on Fine and Deering property, but they weren't asked to do that. They did. And the councilman that I have spoken with said the property is extremely hilly, very difficult to build on, and that's not what they were really wanting to do. But they suggested that they get some outside of Aiken firms to determine the location of the building. Well, I'll just tell you frankly, I contacted an outside of Aiken firm that I thought could give a real objective report, and the council person in that office, in the procurement office, never sent him any information back. And when I asked her about it today, she said, well, we figured they were just architects. Well, they aren't. It's a firm. They have engineers as well. You know, I don't know. This is just feeling to me like it's one of those things that if we don't get involved and citizens don't get involved, that we're going to turn around and we're going to have, I mean, they're talking about an even 25 to 50 acres so that the judicial center can be out there eventually. Well, that's emptying out our courthouse. I mean, when I moved to Aiken in 1974, they were going to move the courthouse out to Hampton Avenue, and that's the first thing I worked on in a public sense when I moved to Aiken, because I thought that would be a huge mistake. Fortunately, they didn't have enough money, so they didn't do it, and they left it there. And I think it's been important to our city for it to be there. And I don't know. I don't mean to talk about all this now. This is what I meant to talk about later. But this is why I think we need to talk about it, really.
Okay, let's.
I agree. It should be on there.
Let's add that to the under petitions and requests. It's the third item.
I have something that I'd like to bring up to council. One, we're going to need to go ahead, and we could have it on the next agenda, but we need to select someone for Aiken Corporation from council. And we are going to have an executive session, but before we have the executive session that's already planned, I'd like to go into executive session and discuss a matter concerning contractual arrangement concerning open space. And talk about that with council and get some direction from you on this open space issue. So when we go into executive session, we'd be going into executive session for the personnel matter and for this contractual agreement concerning open space.
Okay. Okay, anything else? If not, we go to the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of November 12th, 2007. Excuse me?
We didn't approve the agenda.
I beg your pardon. We did not approve the agenda.
Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other additions or deletions to the agenda? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Beverly. Turning to the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of November 12, 2007. Any comments on the minutes? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Next item is a presentation to Councilman Don Sprawls, who will be leaving us as of this evening. And Don, I wonder if you would meet me over here at the microphone.
Yeah. About to give my name and address.
Good idea.
Phone number, please.
Not this time, Don.
Don, I just wanted to say on behalf of council, and I'm sure council members will have their own comments, what a pleasure it has been to work with you. Thank you so much for your service to the city and service to the council. We've had a lot of wonderful times together. We've had some other times that, we've kicked issues back and forth, and we always will have. But it's been a good time. And I want to say to you personally, I don't know of anyone who's been a kinder, willing to help other people, wonderful character, an honest person. I remember many times when the last time I remember personally, and we had an ice storm, and you had wood, and you were calling up people around the city, wanting to know if they needed wood for their fireplaces, because electricity was out. And I was one of them. And I appreciate that very much. My wife and I appreciate that very much. But we weren't the only ones. I want you to know that. And you know that. I know that. And the public safety work that you've done, it's been magnificent, and I assume you'll keep up with that. This guy's one of the first to go at every fire, and he's a volunteer. So we've got wonderful memories, Don, and from council we want to present you a plaque. And it says, presented to Don Sprawls in recognition of his dedicated service to the citizens of Aiken as a city council member, November 1999 to November 2007, by the Aiken City Council, November 26, 2007. So, Don, if I say any more, I'll cry. But thank you. Thank you and your family, too. I don't know if Billy's here or anybody's here, but I know that it takes quite a bit of support from your family to do this, and of course any other job that we might do, it takes that kind of support. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Well, I've been well known for my short speeches, so this won't be a long one. It's been an honor to serve the citizens of Aiken for the last 8 years. It's been an honor to work with this council, Roger, and especially the staff. We don't need council. We got a wonderful staff that could run this city without council, I'm telling you. I'd also like to congratulate Mr. DeWar on his election. We ran a good, clean campaign, and it was an honor to work with you, sir. I really don't have anything else to say except don't call me anymore unless your house is on fire.
Yes, yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I do. I just want to say that it's been a real pleasure sitting next to Don and working with him. And first time I ever got in a fire truck was when he put me in one. And I just want to thank him for all the experience that he brought to council. I want to also say that I would be sitting here and wouldn't be able to see who's in the audience because of the bright lights and either the dirty glasses or just not being able to see, and he would always identify people for me. I'd say, who is so-and-so there? And he'd say, yes, yeah, sitting here or sitting there. I also want you to know that you have time now to go fishing. And I still have all the coolers you ever brought me with fish in them. I'll return them to you, and then you can bring me more fish. But thank you so much for your service, and you are really a gem, and I appreciate your service to this city, not just on council, but all the other things that you do. And I am really going to miss you. I always called you the big guy, and I think we got another big guy coming up here, and I just know that it, you know, I'll be all right.
Mr. Mayor,
yes, sir.
I also have a few comments that I'd like to make. First of all, I'd just like to echo what you said. I don't know of a member of our community that's more willing to serve than Don Sprawls has been. At the one table celebration that we had downtown Aiken, Don had cooked all night, and they cooked 130 turkeys. And it's those things, to me, that represent Don Sprawls. And Don, I know that you've given of yourself to this council. You've given of yourself to this city. You've given of yourself to the volunteer fire department, which Don's now chief. And I just want to thank you. Thank you for the assistance and the help that you gave me as a freshman councilman. And I just look forward to seeing you around, and you're continuing to volunteer for our city. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Mayor, I have a comment to make, or two. Don's demeanor has always stood out with me. You will find Don on this council. He was not one to rush to make a motion. He sat, he listened. Whenever Don spoke, Don had something sound to say. And oftentimes we look at the ones that are outspoken, that says a lot, and they, those individuals are identified as leaders, but we all have leadership styles in our own way, and Don has a leadership style, in my opinion, that carries a trust by so many in this town, in addition to being highly loved and respected. Don was one that if he didn't feel that all the information was provided to us, if he had additional information, he did not hesitate to pick up the phone and call and said, here's another piece of information that you may or may not know that may not be in your agenda package. And I appreciate those things that you've done over the years. I wish you well. I know we'll see you in the community. But your volunteerism began before you became an elected official, and I know that it will continue following it. I see you out there already. I saw you at the One Table Affair. So God bless you and keep you.
Don, you don't have to. You can hang around. Okay. Next item on our agenda is the election report. Report from the Election Commission. Mr. Richard Johnson.
To the Honorable Mayor and members of City Council, to the citizens of the City of Aiken, ladies and gentlemen, the Municipal Election Commission desires to make its report. Date, November 26, 2007. To Aiken City Council, from Municipal Election Commission. Subject, general election, November 6, 2007. The City of Aiken conducted a general election on Tuesday, November 6, 2007, to fill the 3 expired seats on City Council. The election was conducted under the revised 421 single member district plan of 2003. Notification of the election was made public through newspaper advertising as prescribed by law. The following persons qualified and their names were placed on the ballot. On the Republican ticket for mayor, Frederick B. Kavanaugh. On the Democratic ticket for City Council District 1, Beverly D. Clyburn. On the Republican ticket for City Council District 1, Eric R. Smith. on the Republican ticket for City Council District 3, Dick DeWar. On the petition ticket for City Council District 3, Sam Erb. On the write-in tickets for Mayor, David Allen and Gary Allen Sr. The results are as follows. For Mayor, Frederick B. Kavanaugh, 3,594 votes. David Allen, 128 votes. Gary Allen Sr., 62 votes. For City Council District 1, Beverly D. Clyburn, 588 votes. Eric R. Schmidt, 125 votes. For City Council District 3, Dick DeWar, 1,031 votes. Sam Erb, 777 votes. We hereby certify the election of Frederick B. Kavanaugh for mayor, Beverly D. Clyburn for City Council Person District 1, and Dick DeWar for City Council Person for District 3. The terms of each office shall be for a period of 4 years. Attached is a tabulation of votes by precinct. Respectfully submitted, Municipal Election Commission, Richard Johnson Jr., H.A. McLaren, and Keith Woods. Mr. Mayor and members of council, that concludes our report, unless there are questions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the job you do on the Election Commission. And also, Mr. McLaren, I don't know that he's here, and also Keith Wood. We appreciate the work that they do. It doesn't come too often, but when it comes, it's very necessary, and you've done a good job over the years, Richard. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I wanted to recognize Keith or Mac, if they are here.
Keith is
here. Apparently they aren't. But on behalf of the Election Commission, we would like to express our appreciation to the staff. That's Susan, Betty, and Sarah Ryder. Thank you very much for your assisting us.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, sir, very much. Well, the next item is the swearing in of the elected officials. So, Dick, if you come forward, and Beverly,
self.
So help me God.
I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
I am duly qualified. According to the Constitution of this state. To exercise the duties of the office. To which I have been elected. That as a council member of the city of Aiken. I will equally, fairly, and impartially. To the best of my ability and skill. Exercise the trust reposed in me. And I will use my best endeavors. Preserve the peace. And to carry into effect. According to law. The purposes for which I have been elected. And will preserve, protect, and defend. The Constitution of this state and the United States. So help me God.
We'll certainly do that. To Dick Dulois, we welcome you to council, Dick. It's a sad time when you lose somebody, but then it's a pleasant time when you have someone else that you look forward to working with. And we appreciate you, and we look forward to working with you as a nice, good team here. And Beverly, congratulations to you, too.
Thank you.
I would just like to...
Like to say thank you, and thank you to all of the supporters and the voters of District 3. It's tough replacing someone like Don Sprawls. I had an occasion during the election to meet him and realize that he was far more than an opponent, a good and decent man who did his best job to serve the interests of the city, and I promise to work as hard as he did. I'll do my best to come to the meetings prepared, diligent, discuss the issues, try to act in a civil manner, as I know we'll have some very contentious issues on occasion, but we'll work as best we can, and I look forward to working with the fellow council members. So thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to thank the people for the confidence, the vote of confidence that they have placed in me, and I will continue to try my very best to be fair and impartial and to examine all the facts before I act or vote. And I just want to say that I look forward to working with the entire members of all of the members of this council, and hope that we have another good 4 years.
All right, thank you. And I too would like to say thank you to all those who supported me, and even those that didn't. It's a real honor and a privilege to serve on city council and then serve as mayor, as I have been fortunate to do. It's an extreme honor, and it's an awesome thing, and I'm very humbled by the support that I got in this election. And I, too, will work for these good things for Aiken, putting safety first and finances and always listening. We've got a reputation on our city council of being good listeners. And if you don't believe it, come to some of our meetings when we sit here till 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock listening. But that's the way we learn, is when we listen. And we have good back and forth discussions. So those kinds of things, we've got challenges galore, there's no question about that. But we also have plans. But we also have to have patience. We aren't able to solve some of these things overnight. It will take some time. But I want you to know that as a council working together, we do have plans. We'll have more plans for some of our biggest concerns. And I look forward to serving another term, perhaps, whatever the Lord's willing to give me. So thank you very much for those here and also those in a community that are not here for the support that I've gotten over the years. Thank you very much. And I especially, before I forget that, I want to thank my wife. I think she's out there somewhere.
She left.
She left. That's the kind of support I get, see.
Mr. Mayor.
We kid about yes, I know your family's here. But I want to say this. We kid about I kiddly about this all the time, but usually the only time she comes to a city council meeting is at a time like this. And, of course, it's been about four or five of them. So, but I didn't expect her to leave so early. Because I did want to thank her, but she's a true supporter, a love of my life, and I couldn't do a thing without her support and her encouragement. So I just wanted to offer that, whether she's here or not. So, okay. Dick?
And I too, would like to recognize my partner of 43 years. That I probably shouldn't have said that, because she was only 12 when I married her. But my wife Mary Lou and her family, Pat Daugherty, who is known as a retired teacher at Aiken Elementary, lived in Aiken for a long time, and my designated godson, her son, Brendan Daugherty, who manages to clean my clock at golf on a rather regular basis. So that kind of support does make a difference, and I appreciate it very, very much, and I would like to acknowledge it publicly. Thank you, dear.
Okay, the first item under old business has to do with appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We discussed some of the new appointments for the next meeting. That'll be on December the 10th. It'll be coming forward. But tonight we'd like to have four appointments, all of them by Councilwoman Waters. The first one is Michael McGee, who will be replacing his father, William, or Bill McGee, who has resigned. And then there's three reappointments, Rosamond McDuffie to the Design Review Board, Dacre Storko to the Environmental Committee, and Catherine Shirley to the Park Commission. So those are the four appointments to the various boards and commissions before tonight.
Okay, do we have a motion? Jane, would you like to make that?
I'd love to move that these be accepted.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimous. Item 2, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance accepting fiscal year 2006-07 audited financial statements. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2006-2007 audited financial statements and authorizing the variances to the fiscal year 2006-2007 budget ordinance. We had a presentation at the last meeting by Elliot Davis. Their report was that we had a very good audit. There were no exceptions to the audit whatsoever. By accepting this tonight on second reading public hearing, you will be accepting this to balance each of the budget items that we had approved by you a year and a half ago. So before tonight is an ordinance. First reading was the last meeting. This is the second reading, public hearing, to approve the city fiscal year 2006-2007 audited financial statement.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing, and if there's anyone in the audience who wants to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of the...
Okay.
Accepting a fiscal audit for 2006-2007.
I'll second. Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to change the land development regulations concerning engineering inspection of new infrastructure. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is, read this by title only, it's an ordinance amending the land development regulations of the city of Aiken. We've been discussing for the last several months moving to having our engineering department, who currently is involved in these inspections and many other inspections, to going to where a consultant would go ahead and make these inspections and give a final report to the city. It went back to the Planning Commission at their last meeting. They unanimously approved it. And this would be for all projects that we get in after January 1st, 2008. We did get a letter, which I distributed to all of you earlier today, from Tilden Hildebrand. I don't think I saw Tilden out there, who asked a couple of questions on it, and I just wanted to comment. His first paragraph said, because of this, in many cases, we will have to have a full-time inspector on the job. And that is correct. They will have to have a full-time inspector because we have a full-time inspector on the job now. He had also mentioned that in 6.5, which if you look in the ordinance itself under 6.5, it's on page 3, we do have a mistake saying when the dedication of improvements will occur. He says, is it really supposed to be whichever is later, or is it supposed to be whichever is sooner? In the ordinance itself, it says whichever is later. It really needs to be changed to whichever is sooner, which is we will go ahead and accept the utilities 1 year after the improvement's been made, or it's been approved by our engineering, or they have approved it. So the word should be sooner, not later. So if we could make that change, I appreciate it whenever someone wants to make a motion. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. You did hear it on the October 22nd date, and it's time for a public hearing to change the land development regulations concerning the city's current inspection process.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this one, this ordinance, you may do so.
Mark Graham of Southern Partners, Engineering, 809 East Rollingwood Road. I just had a couple questions. I've been leaving y'all alone here lately. I was glad that Tilden had brought up what he and I had talked about that the other day, and that taking it into the city needs to be done before the road maintenance bond runs out, I would think, or before the maintenance bond runs out. So that the citizens who have bought houses or lots in the city are protected. And I guess that's what you're saying, changing that to the center. All right. I had a question on there's really no, at the present time, control and quality assurance measure outlined. And I guess but in talking to Larry, we may be able to glean what that's supposed to be, but we would like some guidance for that if possible. One of the other things that I don't know on 3.2.1 says the application must name an engineer of record for the project who utilizes control and quality assurance measures as outlined in the city engineering specifications. Does that mean that the design engineer and this engineer of record can be different companies or different people?
Why don't you come up front, Larry, so you can answer these questions.
Yeah, we had some discussion about that amongst my staff and also planning staff. That does mean that you could have a different engineer of record. A lot of companies nowadays will use one engineering firm to do all the design work, and then they will hire an engineering firm that specializes in construction to actually do the inspection and quality control testing. So there could be a different engineer of record from the design engineer actually certifying construction.
Does this need to be made clearer in the ordinance? Or do you feel it's clear enough?
I think you can interpret it either way, the way I was doing it.
That's what I was wondering about.
We left the ordinance this way, and we would actually put it on the application. There would be two lines on the application. One would be for design engineer. One would be for engineer of record for construction. Okay. Then that way they could fill in either line, do not necessarily have to fill in both lines.
Okay.
As long as we have a name that we can go back to, that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
Okay, this is probably for Larry, too. In that case, which it certainly suits us, that engineer record, Larry, the way this is written, would have to certify that the design also met. Is that really what you want, or because y'all are going to review the plan? Does that engineer have to certify the design also?
Every design that we have come in by state law must be signed and sealed by the design engineer. That is the, as far as state law is concerned, that is the engineer of record for the design. If that engineer is not named on the application, then whatever engineer is named on the application is certifying to the construction. The original design engineer, of course, by state law is certifying to the design.
I agree with that. It seems to me it doesn't read that way, but I'm sure Gary can work that out.
What would you suggest, Monk? I mean, just is there a phrase that should be added or something?
I really don't know, because, I mean, here it plainly says the engineer of record shall also certify that the project design meets city specifications, if you leave that up. And I don't think that the construction inspection engineer, if it's different than the design company, is going to want to do that.
Okay, well, let's make it clear. So there's no question.
Yeah, I think it needs to be a little clearer.
Well, what you're saying, Mark, is that it can only be one way, and that is that if you're saying that the second engineer will not certify what the design engineer has done, then it might
not. Well, usually a construction engineer certifies that the construction is done according to city standards or to the approved plans. And the way this reads, it has the engineer of record, who may be different than the design engineer, certifying that the project design meets city specifications. What do you think, Gary? I mean,
Richard has actually threw up this
whole
round
by
attorneys. You better watch out.
Richard was pointing out that what we can do is change the application procedure to show that the engineer of record so named for the control and quality assurance would certify only to the construction, and that the engineer, the design engineer of record, would certify only to the project design. So we can make those changes, and I think it would become much clearer then that there could be two individuals doing that, or certainly there could be one firm doing that also. But by making that change, I think that will separate it out for council. And we would make that change there. And also, I believe, as Richard was pointing out, we would look at that also under section 3.1.1. Again, it says engineer of record shall also certify that the project design and construction. We would make that change there also to get the language to actually split that up and allow for two engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Here would be the language that
tell us where you're reading from, Larry.
Sir?
Tell us what
I'm looking at. 3.1.1.
Okay.
The last underlined sentence, bottom of the page, we would change and say the engineer of record shall also certify that the construction meets city specifications, period. new sentence. The design engineer of record shall certify the project design meets city specifications. That allows for two engineers.
And it's very clear if you say it that way.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's really all I have.
Is that, does that satisfy your concerns, Mark? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Richard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, is anyone else?
Jane Page Thompson, 240 Knox Avenue. I had expressed some concerns about this when you all brought it up in work session, and my concern for where the engineers are going to come from still exists. Being a professional that deals with these gentlemen on a regular basis, there tend to be only a couple in the game in town, and as Aiken tends to be growing more and more, their pressures on their jobs are even greater. And I am concerned that if you remove the city, as it suggests in the proposed project, the recommendations from staff and from the city manager, that the city engineering department will cease to provide project inspection services altogether. I am very concerned as a citizen, not only as a citizen who lives on roads, but as a citizen who sells roads to people, or houses on roads to people, and also sells subdivisions that will probably be annexed to the city, that if the city removes itself from this process and allows the, forgive me, Mark, the foxes to guard the hen house, I think the city will have a rude awakening in a few years when, after the first year, road failures begin to occur. Especially in some of the projects now, we're looking at a relative reduction in a slower market. I think we're not going to see the building construction boom back to the 05-06 numbers that Aiken has been knowing and seeing. Pat can correct me. For another year or so, you've got people who are building roads in 08 that may not get 75% use until 09-2010, and those roads have potential to fail, and there's no bond to ensure that they're going to fail, and these certified engineers of record, there's no guarantee that they're not going to retire or depart that position. So I was hoping that the city would put something in place, either it's a higher fee, a longer term bond than a year, something that will ensure people who are buying houses on new roads that the city, even though it didn't inspect this process, which the city has been very good about doing in the past, that in this new, as you go from one process to the other, that there's sort of a halo period of about 2 years where the city doesn't 100% cease doing everything, that there is maybe the initial consultation with the approvals, and then maybe there's a mid-project inspection, and then, of course, a physical final inspection, just over the transition period as you phase out of doing it yourselves and into the private sector doing it, just to make sure that it doesn't create collapsed roads down the road.
Okay. I don't think really the city's going to phase out totally on this process, but Larry, would you address Jane Page's concerns about what the city will do on interim points?
Certainly. The one thing that has to be remembered is that the engineer of record will be certifying with his professional engineering stamp and signature. That is taken very seriously by the state of South Carolina. As you recall, during our initial presentation of this at October meeting, I had stated that at some point we will be coming back to you and probably recommending a 2-year maintenance bond rather than 1 year. I think that would have take care of some of the concerns that we've just heard. We will be requiring the engineer of record to submit us the lab test results. We'll be requiring them to submit, in the case of roads, the density test. We'll be requiring them to submit proof rolls. Proof rolls not found anywhere in our specifications. It's in our checklist. And we will be working with Mark and some other engineers just to make certain that we do have a good checklist, that they know what they have to submit. we don't want to wait till a project is complete and get a ton of paperwork in and then decide, oh, we better look at this. We'll be requiring those as each roadway is complete, as each sewer line or water line is in the ground, we'll be requiring them to submit the paperwork on it. When we get that paperwork, that gives us an opportunity to either go out in the field and look, or if we've got a project that's been underway a while and we know that the contractor's doing well, the engineer's doing well, we may not need to go out in the field. But it keeps us from having to be there on a daily basis. But we would definitely have the paperwork in there. Let's say that, to use the term, and Mark, again, forgive me, the fox guarding the hen house, if that did so happen, and we had a failure, and we could, let's say, dig down and prove what that failure was, and that failure was due to the fact that maybe the road wasn't put in. You know, take a very black-white example. If the roadway design had called for 6 inches of crushed stone under the pavement, and we dug down and found out it wasn't there, but the engineer had certified that it's there, the first call we're going to place is to the Labor Licensing Board. The second call that's going to happen is going to be from that board to the engineer, and he's going to have to prove why he should still have a license and practice in engineering for falsifying records. Would it come to that? I certainly hope not. Am I ready to do that phone call? Yes, I am. I think to protect the city and to protect our citizens, I have to take that hard-line stance on that, that you know, we have to make certain that what we have is quality. And the only way to do that is that if the folks know out there that we may not be out there on a daily basis, but if we have to make the phone call, we will.
But let's say that the engineer of record, as Jane mentioned, is retired. He's gone. He doesn't care anymore. Who pays for the repairs?
If he's retired, the state also has a requirement that the firm be licensed in South Carolina. If that firm is still in existence, then they do have the responsibility for that. If all else fails and the engineer's retired, he's gone, the firm's gone, I would have to consult with our attorneys and say, you know, what recourse do we have at that point? I really can't answer that question for you, Councilman Smith. If it's a firm that's been around a while, certainly we do have recourse. If it's a, let's call them a fly-by-night firm that started up last week and they go out of business next week, then we'd have to look and see what legal issues we would have with that.
So do we have any control over who the engineer of record is going to be?
We would not have control over that unless there was a complaint lodged against them on the state level. That we could find out about. You know, if this engineer had a bad track record with the state, then certainly we could find out about that and raise some issues. I might point out, though, that if, going back to the fly-by-night analogy, if that happened even now with us inspecting, we'd be in the same boat. If the startup firm was there, they did the work, it was sloppy work, we put a stop order on them, we tried to get it going, they finally finished the work and it appeared to be acceptable but failed 6 months later, the only thing we've got to fall back on is that bond. And that's why possibly going to a two-year bond may be a very good thing for us.
Can you just do that? Can you just take it to a two-year bond in this ordinance now, tonight?
I'd have to pass that on to our legal staff.
I guess my question is, could you be considered an engineer if you're retired and no longer practicing engineering work? I mean, don't you have to meet some kind of minimum standards to continue to be called an engineer?
You do have to pass state boards. You have to be a practicing engineer in that you maintain your licensure each year. The state does have the right to audit your continuing education credits. If those continuing education credits are found lacking, then they can take action on that, so that if someone retires and just more or less drops out of sight and they're not getting continuing education or practicing at all, then that does surface.
But I mean, the question is, if you hire somebody retired, you're still an engineer if you have kept up, and aren't you still legally responsible for your work?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. And again, I'd have to ask legal staff how the laws actually affect that. Let's say you're hired for one job, and you go back into retirement after that job, then legally I would have to ask our legal staff, isn't there some type of protection under state law for cases such as that?
I mean, the engineer, if he's still licensed, then he has satisfied all of the requirements of the licensing.
Correct.
Licensing folks in Columbia, and I doubt that you probably know this better than I do, whether an insurance requirement is a part of the licensing requirement. I don't know that answer. Do you know?
It's not a part of the licensing requirement, but any engineer that practices without insurance and puts his seal on something is taking a great risk.
Right. Right. I mean, you can practice law without having malpractice insurance if you want to. You can be a doctor. I think you still be a doctor without having malpractice insurance.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, those opportunities are available, but the licensing aspect of the engineer would require that engineer to maintain whatever requirements the state requires him to maintain.
Correct.
But if it's like Dick asked, he may not care if we just say you can't do this anymore if he's retired. Is that the point?
But you still have a legal cause of action against the developer of the neighborhood. Whoever developed the neighborhood, relying on that certified engineer. I mean, they still have some legal liability to make sure that property was developed correctly. I mean, they're not just passing the buck off to the engineer because he's stamping a plan or stamping the certificate. I mean, there's still lots of liability.
You're saying even if the engineer makes an error, mm-hmm. and a significant error, that the developer is still going to be fiscally responsible?
Correct.
Okay. I just have one question. I was struck by a comment in a letter, on the Hildebrand letter. We're the only jurisdiction in the states of Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina doing it this way?
That is correct, as far as we know. We called several other cities in South Carolina and checked on internet in other states. And basically, other cities have much larger engineering staffs. They put folks out on jobs more or less full time. We have very limited time that we can be on jobs. With our engineering staff, and especially with all the development that's going on inside the city, in addition to our own work that we do in-house. So if you look at that, I think Mr. Hildebrand's comments, as Aiken County and the surrounding counties have done, I would assume that full-time field staff would have to be increased significantly to implement the program. It would be a significant increase to try to put inspectors on every project out there in addition to the stormwater program, as he is talking about here.
And it's your judgment it's in the best interest of the city to do it this way?
That is correct.
To take it one step further, there are many states, you know, the surrounding ones that he mentioned are, what Larry said is correct, there are many other states that this is a course of action that's being done on a daily basis, where an engineer record does the certification. If the city is going to continue doing this type of work, we were going to have at least one other person. We're not adequately inspecting things as we should. We're not getting to the projects that we need to, that are our projects. To hire an engineer and to get that person a vehicle and you start putting on your insurances that we have, we're talking about $75,000 to $100,000 a year for the city. And that's the kind of savings we're talking about by reversing it and having the engineer record go ahead and make these inspections. Now, what's going to happen? Somebody's going to have to pay for that, and the people that will be paying for that, it's going to be passed off to the houses they buy, the businesses that are built. So although we save these, the cost then get passed on to someone else. So it's either we pay for it or somebody else has to pay for it. And we saw this as something being done in other states. It's very successful. It's worked very well. And one of the reasons why we're recommending it to City Council.
And if I may add to Mr. LeDuc's comments, I served with the American Public Works Association on a national board for them for about 6 years with the National Society of Professional Engineers as a liaison with specification writings. The folks that were on that board from the National Society of Professional Engineers were by and large from major engineering corporations. And what I learned from them then was that the private industry especially is going to the engineer of record almost exclusively, and even hiring construction firms to oversee the engineer of record just to make certain that their specifications are followed. So this is a definite trend, not only in other public jurisdictions, Kentucky being one of them, which is where I'm from, but also in the private industry.
Well, from what you say, I've had talked about a longer bond period to begin with, and I really think that it would make sense if we went ahead and did the 2-year bond period right now.
Jane Page Thompson. Can you also require a part of the application process that the engineer of record and the design engineer provide their insurance certifications to be held by the city until the 2-year period is up? So then that way, if they've said we're going to be insured for the 2-year period of the design we're making, then we will maintain our insurance for up until that point. I mean, I think that that's an only fair thing to make sure, because when there is a failure down the road, we don't want to see citizens living on a road that nobody can find the developer because it was a limited LLC out of Canada that did it. The engineer was a short-term guy. I mean, I think that it'd be the best protection would be to, if you're going to extend the 2-year maintenance bond, go on and require that proof of insurance be made by the engineers of record and design.
And I'm not exactly sure how the process works, but when they actually go to the bonding company to get the bonding company goes through that process with them, and they wouldn't issue the bond if the engineer was not properly certified or insured, for that matter. The problem with putting a clause like that in an ordinance is you could order them to keep it for 2 years, but once whatever certifications were made, if they went to the insurance company and say, I want to cancel that insurance effective tomorrow, they would do it, and we wouldn't have any control over how they do that. With the city inspecting the projects right now, we don't have any liability protection anyway over how the city engineers are doing that inspection, so we're actually getting a bonus that we're not getting right now.
Well, as long as there's a way to prove that the person, that the applicant is the engineer of application, not necessarily having the ordinance, but that as a part of the application process.
Before the bonding company will issue that bond, they run them through some pretty rigorous tests first.
Well, but they can be required to give us a copy of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all.
We should have a copy of that to show that they have insurance.
Exactly, that's what I'm asking.
We get the performance bonds and the maintenance bonds for each project that the city.
Before you get to that phase, as the initial application process, since you're going to have an engineer record and potentially a design engineer, it would make sense, since there may be some new guys getting in the game, since there tend to be a couple in the game now and we need more, to go on and start seeing who's shaking out. Like Councilman Smith said, how do we know who these people are going to be? Is there a list or whatever? Well, you can have it be a part of the application process, not necessarily part of the ordinance, that they provide their copies of their certifications and their insurance. That's all I'm saying. I think the 2-year maintenance bond is the best solution to my concerns, so thank you for considering that.
Gary, one question. If someone is bonded when they perform the work, now, does that bond not continue to work for the period of time in which it's placed, whether the man's in business or not?
If the city requires a 1-year bond or a 2-year bond, however the city ultimately decides to do that, the bond is good for that period. And
whether or not the firm's
he could stop working tomorrow, the bond's still good.
So that will give us the 2-year period that we needed.
That's correct.
In which to determine whether or not the road was sufficient.
That's correct.
But is that 2-year bond, does that run concurrently while the road's being built, or does that start when the road is certified as finished?
The 2-year bond is the maintenance bond, and that starts the day that the road is certified. as having been completed as per city specifications. And I might add, Councilman Wells, the bond itself is coming from the developer rather than the engineer, and ultimately then the developer can hold the contractor responsible. The engineer of record, when he's certifying to us, especially under his insurance, his error and omissions insurance, you know, that gives us a lot of protection all the way through the process to the final certification. Then we get the additional protection of the performance and maintenance bond from the developer from that point on. So I think we would be very adequately covered there, because we do not accept anything during that construction phase. So even though the engineer may have E&O insurance or what have you, what's more important to us is getting that bond from the developer and ultimately back through the contractor that we would hold to be able to fix any problems that we see within the bonding period.
Okay. Is anyone else? We're still in public hearing. If anyone else want to speak? Jane Page, thank you for your comments, by the way.
Pat. Cunningham.
Pat.
Good evening. Pat Cunning, 113 Mulberry. We at Woodside are not against this proposal. Matter of fact, if we had the proposal, we probably would have saved a bunch of money on one road that Reggie's looking at. But as far as the fox and the hen house, I may have to fire my fox if he doesn't do a better job on some of his inspections. But the main question that I had was, and this is to Larry. Larry, if I'm paying an engineer to stand there to watch everything, which obviously is going to cost us more money. We know that. It's going to be more expensive to develop, and we accept that. The way it works now is your staff looks, and you have the proof roll, and you have everything. I think the way it's supposed to work is if my engineer's there, he's got liability insurance, and he says it's good to go, it's going to be good to go. You will do a final inspection to make sure everything's right, but I'm not running through the gauntlet of two inspections, because what's happening right now is that we get delayed. If I'm paying the extra five or six or whatever the amount of money is to have my engineer or a certified engineer that's got insurance, then once they certify, it's ready to go for the different steps. Because you may want to educate the city council about what the city is doing now, is that my engineer can tell us to go, give you all the reports, and I'm free to move forward. Is that the way it's going to happen?
Pat is correct. That's the way that we have it planned to happen. Right now, you know, there will be an engineer inspector on the job, then I have to have my people come along. And sometimes there's, shall we call it, differences of opinion. My folks normally win.
from the contractor, not
from the contractor, not the developer. By going to the requirements for the engineer of record to do the testing, to present us with lab testing, then we would not necessarily be out there then. What we'd be looking for at the final would be, has all the paperwork come in? Do we have a signature and a seal on it? And does it look like it's supposed to look? We may not go the straight road to that point. We may have to make a detour or a curve or two. But if it looks like it's supposed to look and we have the certification from the engineer that it was put in and it is going to last, and we have that bond, let's not forget that, then I think that's what we're shooting for. And so to answer Mr. Cunning's question is, no, we would not be out there looking over their shoulder on a regular basis. That's what we're trying to get out of at this point. More or less be able to reassign our manpower, not only to our own projects, but to satisfying citizen requests where we have low-pressure situations, to be able to go out and just do more proactive looking in our system to be able to renew our system and do what we need to be doing from that end of it without adding a lot of personnel.
The other savings that it has to the developer, we are not always available immediately when the developer may want to have a water line tested or sewer line looked at or road paved, if they even want to pave or do something on a weekend because they were really behind. We're not there to inspect it. And so there's times we have to go, say, to Pat and say, Pat, I'm sorry, we don't have the personnel, we don't have the time to go ahead and test that water line for another week. And so in this case, his engineer could do it immediately, and he doesn't have to wait for the city of Aiken to have the personnel and the time to go ahead and make some of those inspections.
One final comment, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to ask Larry, over the last, I think Larry's been there 20 years or 30 years, whatever, how many times over the two-year period he's had to go in and repair things? I know at Woodside we've had to step in and repair things that our contractors did before we could get, obviously, the homeowners to take over. And then I think we've had issues with water and sewer that we haven't turned over in 3 to 4 years. I think we finally got that squared away now. So the main thing I'm going to say is, this is going to cost more to do business in the city of Aiken. We're in favor of it. Our price range of homes are such that we fold it right into the purchase. But when you get to the lower price range homes, it's going to cost more to do business in the city of Aiken. No question about it. We basically are in favor of it because I think it's the right thing to do. But don't kid yourself. It's going to cost more to do business in the city of Aiken. It's the right thing to do, but it is going to cost more to do business.
Okay. I'm missing something here then. You've got an engineer that you already have.
Yes, ma'am.
We're getting a person. We have a person that's watching the hen house. How is that costing you?
No. In order to have his E&O insurance go in, right now, his E&O insurance, he has it, but he's not certifying the inspections. What we're requiring now is he's going to have to certify inspections. In order to do that, he's got to have a person on the ground that's going to charge to be there. Right now, we do inspections periodically. We do not have him there on the ground. Now, the city does a great job. The city is doing a great job. Now, remember, when you take you're only taking the water and the sewer at Woodside. We have the own streets. Now, y'all do the inspections on the streets as well, mm-hmm. but that's as a service. But I think we're going to end up where we won't have the problems in the future. Like I said, if we'd have had this on one particular road that I have, I can't even tell you how much money it would save. So we're not against this. Mm-hmm. But what I am telling you is it will cost more to do business in the city of Aiken. Probably to the tune of between $500 and $1,000 a lot. I'm guessing that's what we're probably calculating, that it's going to cost that much in inspection fees. And remember, when his E&O insurance, I guarantee you that the insurance for, well, he's probably already left, but for Mark Graham is probably going to go up. The reason why Tilden's concerned is his E&O insurance is going up tomorrow if he does business in the city of Aiken. What I'm concerned about is that it costs more. And this is the businessman speaking to you. If it costs more to do business in the city of Aiken, that's something that y'all do need to be concerned about. You're more concerned right now, which I think you're right, making sure you got good roads. But what I'd like Larry to comment on is how many problems over the last 2 years or last 25 years he's had in the two-year construction period. So,
several questions there. Let me try to address them. We'll go for the first one quickly. We've caught a lot of the problems on roadways, utilities, et cetera, during the construction process many, many times over the years, and I have been here going on 20 years now. We've had contractors dig places back out of roads. We've had them recompact. We've had them redo utility lines. So at the end of the 1 year, at the end of the time when we're saying, okay, council, we feel it's time that it can be dedicated to you, that we feel we've got a pretty decent product. Could that product fail a year and a day after it's been dedicated? Yes, it could. We're not magicians by any manner or means. But as far as having a lot of failures after we've had them dedicated, we have not had a lot of failures. But we've caught a lot of stuff during a construction phase with having our folks out there. And I think that will continue to happen even with the engineer of record out there. Hopefully that answers that question. Let's go to the question of cost. Pat's absolutely right. It will cost more. But let's think for a moment. If you've got houses that are on fairly large lots, fairly large homes, if a standard block is 600 feet long and you've got a house that's got 100 feet of frontage, you've only got really six houses on that block. So you've got the inspection for that block of road and the utilities for that block of road going to six homes. Go to the smaller homes now in the $125,000 to $150,000 range. They don't have 100-foot wide lots. They have much smaller lots. You may have 10 to 12 houses along that same block. Well, if you take the exact same inspection fees, because it's the same inspection fee for that roadway and those utilities, mm-hmm. whether it's six homes or a dozen homes, all of a sudden you get, I hate to use the term economy of scale, but that's what you're seeing in the closer packed subdivisions, the more dense subdivisions. So the dollars per home definitely would come down. There will definitely still be a cost there. Pat is correct about that. I just don't know what that cost would be at this point.
One thing I like about this is it gets the responsibility for the job right back to the people that are doing it. And I think perhaps that's one of the reasons, maybe, Pat and Larry, that we've seen so many problems earlier when the city goes out there. And I'm not saying this happens, but perhaps they don't take it as seriously when they're doing the construction because they don't have that engineer of record right there. They know that the city's going to come out, and who knows whether they think that maybe the thing will last 2 years or 3 years and then fail or something. But mm-hmm. I think if they have to do this, they're going to take it more seriously. They're putting their credentials up mm-hmm. For inspection there if something does go wrong. So I think it's the right thing to do, to get it right back to the place it ought to be and the responsibility where it ought to be, and that's the people that are doing the work. And as we said, as you said, Larry, we're not stepping out of this thing totally at all. You've got your periodic inspections and those things you mentioned earlier that are going on in the process. So, anyone else? Yes.
My name is Reggie Ebner. I'm on 165 Foxhound Run. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. I did speak on this same subject at the earlier meeting as well at the planning and zoning meeting. I look at the increased cost they're talking about. The cost gets built in over years anyway. If you do have failures, you're going to pay for it 3, 5, 10, or 15 years down the road. Basically, the road should last 15 to 20 years with minimum maintenance. And that's the point that I would come from a citizen looking at. To answer you some, I can help you on the questions you had about being bonded, a registered engineer, and so forth. I worked for DuPont, retired from them, then I currently work for Roger Milliken as a consultant. I am a professional engineer. I'm not registered in South Carolina, but I'm registered in Texas, and I keep pretty close to it. As an individual, it's very difficult to get insurance to operate. You have to work with another company in today's world. And I tried doing that when I first went out on my own, and I couldn't do that. What happens is if I go to work for a company, they carry the insurance for me. If you say your E&O insurance or your bond goes way up because you're working on a certain job, I would take a little different approach because usually I've represented the owner. That means somebody knows there's more errors out there than we do. And so that does happen out there. The bonding company will not just arbitrarily take a new kid on the block. You've got to go through a pretty rigorous, registration period. You have to have some background. You probably got to be working for some other company before you can get bonded. And the way they weed you out, if your bond is 15 or 20%, you're not competitive because usually a bond is 1.5% to 4% range. So that might help you on how a bonding company works in this particular case. But I do support this. My position is in the long term, it will keep the cost about equal for the lots.
Thank you, Reggie. Okay. Anyone else? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
If I could just say, if Council wants, if you decide to pass this tonight, whoever makes the motion, make it with the changes that were suggested, that Richard Pierce had given to Larry, and that we'd go from a 1 to 2 year bond within this.
Gary, did you have some wording there that you were working on?
No, sir. I was just relying on what Larry had put onto the record orally. Richard has it in writing, okay. And Richard has the ordinance on his computer.
I would be pleased to move that we approve this on second reading, including the increase in the bond to 2 years and the suggestions that have been made by
the design engineer will certify that the
If you got the proper wording,
I have what Richard read, but I don't.
Okay. What we're doing under section 3.1.1, under that subsection A, mm-hmm. we're just taking out the words design and changing meet to meets, and then adding the sentence, the design engineer of record shall certify the project design meets city specifications. We're making that same change over in 3.2.1A, mm-hmm. subsection lowercase I.
And then sooner.
And sooner under 6.5, and then we'll add in that the bond will be for a 2-year period.
Yes.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion, Dick, you, and a second.
I put the second.
Okay, very good. Any other comments, discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Very good. Good discussion. Okay, new business. First reading of an ordinance to rezone 3 parcels of land on Sumter Street. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title. It's an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by Robert Stack from general business to residential single family. These lots are all on Sumter Street, 112, 120, and 124. The old Aiken master plan stated that these areas would be preferable to go from general business to single family. So the intent of the comprehensive plan and what Mr. Stack would like to do coincides tremendously, and this would be a great start. The Planning Commission voted unanimously to approve the rezoning of this property, and so for City Council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone 3 lots on Sumter Street from general business to RS-10 single-family residential.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show a hand. I'm sorry?
Just one question. So the rest of the block is still general business?
Correct.
This is a good beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay. All in favor?
Thank you, Robert, for doing that.
Show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously.
Very good.
Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 405 York Street. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by Beaver Dam Ventures, LLC, from residential multifamily low density to limited business. This property is located at Abbeville and York Street. Currently, the properties around it are all single-family homes. Council got into a lot of discussion concerning this a number of years ago when you looked at the street just to the west on Chesterfield Street, and some properties wanted to go from residential to general business. There's a florist that wanted to move a particular operation up in that area. At that time, you said you wanted to remain residential. The old Aiken master plan, again, when we went through that whole process, stated that these areas should remain residential. The Planning Commission discussed this. It was a 3-3 vote, and because it was not an affirmative vote, it comes to you as denial of this request. The property owner would like to go ahead and to make this limited business so that a nonprofit could go ahead and use one of these houses to go ahead and operate out of. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone property located at 120 Abbeville and 405 York Street from residential multifamily low density to limited business.
Okay, thank you, sir. Would you like to speak to this, Jim, since you have a client there? Jimmy Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jim Holley, 111 Park Avenue, business address, and 190 Aberdeen Drive, residence. Your Mayor, we would ask Council to give this first reading tonight so we could have a full discussion of it at its second reading, if Council so inclined. I am here with Mr. Stewart, who is the owner of Beaver Dam, as well as three adult volunteers with Young Life. We had hoped that the Young Life youth could come, but they're having a meeting tonight of a more important nature, one of their meetings, and we'd like for them to be here to appear. We also had some neighbors that were in support of the change. Some of them may be here tonight, but if council's so inclined to give it first reading so that we could discuss it at second reading, we would ask for that. If there's some problem with doing that, certainly I can take as long as you like to discuss them.
Jim, just let me ask you, I'll ask Gary too, same to respond on the same point. There's been some discussion about this perhaps being spot zoning if it were to be approved.
Yes, sir.
What's your feeling on that? It may be opposite feelings.
Well, and unfortunately, Gary and I have had differing opinions lately, but it's my opinion that it would not be spot zoning, and I can go through the reasoning behind that if you'd like. Yeah. It's based... I'm sorry. Excuse me. Go ahead. Yes, sir. It's based primarily on a case that some of you are familiar with. Spot zoning is a doctrine that's developed by court decisions. It's not a state statute. It's developed by court decisions. And each state's court decisions on spot zoning are a little different. South Carolina has a very liberal view of spot zoning that gives local governments a lot of flexibility in making their decisions. And simply because a lot or a small area is being rezoned different to the zoning around it does not make it spot zoning. It's a fact-oriented analysis. You look at uses in the entire area, not just next door. For example, the other end of the block from this property is Church's Fried Chicken and a very large, massive general business zone. Limited business is a transitional zone. This is a transitional area. But you look at a number of factors, and the leading case in this area, it comes from 1991 when Lucy Knowles challenged the zoning of Peggy Fitch's physician's offices on Two Notch when I was city attorney, and Lucy challenged that as spot zoning because it was next to a park and residences, and the Supreme Court came back in unanimous decision by Justice Tolan said no, it was not. She said you look at a number of different factors and facts, including what's in the area, what's for the common good, a whole litany of a list of items before you make a decision whether or not it's spot zoning. And if you look at a map of this area, and I have copies of the map, there are little tracts of limited business, limited professional throughout the area. And I know Mr. Smith may have a different view on this, but the Sumter Street property is three small lots in the middle of a general business zone. If you look at its consistency with what's around it, one could argue using a very strict approach that that's spot zoning. But the courts in South Carolina have said you look at a long list or a list of items before you make that decision. And I can go back, pull out the cases and read you from the South Carolina Municipal Association manual on comprehensive planning. It's saying the same thing that I'm saying. It says just because you have a small piece of property zoned one way and it's surrounded by property that's zoned differently does not make it spot zoning. That's basically a direct quote from the Municipal Association's planning manual. So that, in a nutshell, is why I would respectfully submit that it is not spot zoning. And it's only spot zoning if a court determines it. And I think a court would take the approach as it did in the Knowles case and find that this is not spot zoning.
Mm-hmm. What would your opinion be then about what would happen to all the other lots between the Church's Fried right. Chicken and this right. if this were limited business?
Right.
I mean... We've got a lot of residences over there on York Street, so what's the argument? Well, next to me is limited business, so, I mean, I'm buying, and a lot of those houses are empty. I mean, they're not lived in, they're not owner-occupied. A couple are, I think, but a lot of them aren't, and, what would your position be if you were their attorney then? Say, well, I bought this, and right next to me is a limited business, and are we just saying that York Street's going to be commercial?
And that's, Jane, my fear. At one time, I don't know, the other case that we had to come before us was a larger unit in the other block of York Street where the Daniels, Dr. Daniels, wanted to convert a business into a residential facility into a business, and that was also rejected. So we have had some precedent established, and also on the lower end of Chesterfield Street, there was a person that came before us that wanted to convert a residential area into a business. So we have people over the years that I've served that has tried to encroach and try to turn these residential areas into businesses, and once that surge begins, then you have an area that has been inhabited by residents that suddenly becomes a business zone. And do we not want to give the same protection to these areas as we protected other areas? Or do we want to start the surge and turn these areas into business areas?
Do you have, the only thing that makes me more ambivalent on this is Dr. Miles' office was there for so many years. It was always, I'd rather see it limited professional, frankly, rather than limited business if it's going to be anything. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying. That building...
It was twofold. He had residential above him.
Yes.
Mrs. Eubanks rented to a renter
okay.
upstairs, and he had the office downstairs, mm-hmm. and then she lived next door.
Mm-hmm.
If I may... I understand your points, and I agree those are points on the merits of whether to rezone it or to what to rezone it, but that I don't think those relate, in my opinion, to whether or not it's spot zoning. Those are those are planning decisions based on what's, in your judgment, best for that area and what it should be zoned. So, and that's why I think, you know, to flesh out all that would take a while to do, but I don't think... Again, respectfully, that's a spot zoning question. That's the same issue that you deal with on whether it's a good zoning decision or not. And at least three of the members of the Planning Commission agreed with us that it was a good zoning decision.
But, Jim, I don't think it's a matter of whether it's spot zoning or not.
Right.
It's a matter of whether you want to start the business trend
right.
along that line.
Right.
For the purpose for which he wants to do the change, I don't know that does it need to be changed just to have Young Life there? Can they not just meet in the building like it is with the current zoning?
I don't think they can. First of all, it's going to have to be renovated for anybody to use it, both buildings, and it's going to take some significant amount of money to make it usable. The plans are to have Young Life there for 10 or 15 years, as long as they want to be there, with the second floor used for apartments and the other building perhaps used for apartments for Young Life interns.
Is that the building behind it you're
yes,
talking
ma'am.
About?
Yes, ma'am. It's a lot. It's a third of an acre with a really a commercial building in front on York and a residence on Abbeville behind. It has two structures. So in my judgment, to use it for offices and have some reasonable way to recover your money once Young Life leaves there, you're going to have it as limited business or limited professional, which allows offices. You stand not to recover your money because you're going to develop the first floor as offices, not as apartments. And it's been used as a doctor's office, an optometrist's office. One of the planning commissioners said when he was growing up, it was a little neighborhood store.
Yeah.
And it's been a beauty shop.
Mr. Terry operated a little neighborhood grocery
right,
there.
Right. The other option that's been expressed is to get a special exception for an institutional use or something like that. The difficulties with that is you can only use it for that. So if Young Life, if Mr. Stewart spends the money, renovates it into offices, and that they decide for whatever reason in 5 years to leave, and he's not charging them rent for the space, then he's stuck. He's going to have to convert it to apartments and spend money again. And it's not a good economic investment, even though at least initially he sees it as basically his part of his tithing to his faith to allow them to operate there for no rent for as long as they want it. They've had to move three or four times the last few years because wherever they find space, the people that are giving it to them find out or something happens and they can't continue to give them the space. it basically free. The problem with a special exception is, one, it's limited to that one use, and two, if you look at the requirements of a special exception, they'd have to prove to the Board of Zoning Adjustment, many of them are the same that Planning Commission are saying why we shouldn't rezone it. It has to be consistent with the comprehensive plan. And there are other factors that it says the Board of Zoning Adjustments has to consider in order to grant a special exception, and I don't know that we can prevail on those points. And then our only appeal then is to court. Of course, we can't come back to you from the Board of Zoning Adjustment.
Well, you know, one of the things that bothers me about this tonight is that we changed our ordinance, remember, about 4 years ago, mm-hmm. to say that you didn't have to post a rezoning only 10 days ahead. And I went and drove around there today, and I would have loved to have known what the neighbors on that street thought of this. But because we changed it, yeah. they didn't have the luxury of coming here tonight unless they heard by word of mouth. There's no posting on that property yet. It'll go up 10 days before the next meeting.
Oh, all right.
Well, so, I mean, I just want to go on record as saying this is why I object to us just posting these only 10 days ahead of time. I think when there's information to be given, like you've just given, and the questions Ms. Price just asked are certainly pertinent, I really think the citizens, the neighbors, should have known about this, and I wish we would think about redoing that notification requirement, that it be 16 days or 7 or something, 20 days, something, so that the first reading is not missed by an immediate neighbor.
What also concerns me is that that area at one time had a strong, vibrant family fabric, and over the years that family fabric has either died, left the inheritance to other folks who doesn't have the see the value, just have I don't know how to term it here, but they just don't have the preservation, wanting to preserve the property based on what these families worked so hard to buy and protect and want to own. And so either we can say, hey, these families have moved on, they're deceased, their other families do not live here, we can rechange the neighborhood and convert it to something different, we can take that attitude, or we can continue to preserve the richness of that community the way it was for many, many years. And move families into those residences.
If I may respond briefly, Mr. Mayor, there were several people that spoke at the Planning Commission hearing. The gentleman from or contingent from the church across the street, Williams Chapel, spoke in favor of the rezoning, as did Todd Lista, who owns property in the area, and no one spoke in opposition. You know, and you know, the history of that area is, and I would differ the way some of this area has been characterized, because it is, I would respectfully submit, a mixed-use area right in this neighborhood. If you look at the maps and you go around there and look at what's there, it's a mixed-use area. There's a Croft House across the street with commercial dining and commercial side operations there. There's the church and certain other institutions across the street. There's limited business and limited professional just a block or two away. You have, as you know, down the street, general business. So in the history of that area, for that people lived there, it was mixed use. As the comprehensive plan notes, there were small businesses in the neighborhood as well as residences. And now it's not zoned single-family residence. It's zoned multifamily. So, and I understand.
Jim, in the 60s, I lived at 353 York and 355 York. In both of those apartments, one on the corner right from where Jim wants to, Representative Stewart wants to, the area rezoned, and the apartment next door. And those were star apartments for young couples like William and myself 40 years ago. And over the years, Mrs. Eubanks owned a lot of that real estate, and she's died, left it to someone else who wasn't a family member but a good friend. And he's obviously seen other use for it. But whether we want to just change all of that? I don't know. I struggle with that in terms of changing.
Yes, ma'am.
What has been historic for so many years.
And understand that and respect that and understand to the people in that neighborhood and to council it is an important decision. And that's why we, again, would ask at least that it go to second reading so we can spend the time and have the neighbors there if they'd like to speak. Again, if that would be council's wishes, that's what we...
Jim, one thing...
I'm sorry. I somehow think that that area, given what the properties look like, could turn into a beautiful residential area. It's close to downtown. Some of these areas need to, houses need to be refurbished or need to be torn down and new homes built in replacement of them. But certainly, when you look at the proximity to downtown, walking distance, that's the direction I would lean towards, but I'm still open to hear more. So,
is Young Life not a church related? I mean, it's a church related.
It's a non-denominational Christian movement for high school and age.
So you still have to have a special exception because churches can be virtually
right.
Anywhere.
Well, they also in
are religious.
They will have their offices there, so a lot of the activity that go on there will be administrative and support. They may have some meetings there. They may do some limited counseling. And when you get that mix of operations, I think what I've been told by planning staff, a special exception is needed. Or rezoning.
Jim, Gary's going to speak on the spot zoning too. I just want to make a comment. I notice here that it says in item 3 here on page 2 that the old master plan calls for single family residential. I think that's important, number one. The other thing is, I think what Mr. Stewart's trying to do is a very, very good thing. But I see that I don't think that we've had any businesses go in, as far as I can remember. I know that we've turned down several over in that community.
Mm-hmm. 3.
And whether it should be mixed or whatever, I personally think it should be residential. And that old master plan, which was spent a lot of time was spent on that by a lot of people, calls for it to be single family residential. So I just wanted to make that comment here. I hadn't heard that comment mentioned.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, but it's not zoned single family residential.
No, I know it's multifamily.
Right. And there's a one lot LP about a block away.
Yeah, but if we're going to change it, why change to anything but residential? At least it's residential now.
Yeah.
And so that's a pretty major change, I think, to go to something other than you're making a change. You're saying, hey, from now on, we don't care whether this is going to be residential or a limited professional or whatever it's going to be.
Right.
And that's a big challenge. That's a big step because we have gone the other way over the years and disallowed several things to go on in that same relative community. So, well, I think this is what council has to decide, whether we want to make this change, and it's a stepping stone. You do it today, somebody's going to be here tomorrow to want to do it as well, and something else. And pretty soon it could be one after another.
One thing I just point out, and this is a complicated issue. I won't try to simplify it. Between this lot and Hampton, of course, and then you run into the general business, I think you may find people reluctant to build single-family residences in that block facing York. Now, maybe one street off, I mean, you know, one or two lots off they might, but on fronting York between there and the Hampton and the intense commercial development there, I know there's some single-family residences there now, but expecting people to go in and build, you know, new homes there, it just maybe that's why it hasn't changed for some time. And I just point that out, that this you are less than a block away from a major commercial area with intense commercial activity, and this is less than a block away. And it's just something to take into consideration in what makes the most sense for that part of York going down to Hampton. You know, what people will, with common sense and with reasonable business backgrounds, will do in that area. You may have a different view, but I just point that out. This is not, you know, three or four blocks away. This is less than a block away.
How do you, I don't mean to get technical here, but how do you figure less than a block away? It's on the corner.
Right. At the other end of the street is Church's Fried Chicken.
Right.
So it's less than a block.
You're considering that to be a major commercial area because it's across the street from the catty corner, at least, from shopping center and others.
Yes.
That's how you figure it. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, sir.
I understood.
I suspect Jim already knows this. I actually don't really disagree with a whole lot of what he's already said.
Well, let me just say to you, you mentioned the Croft House, Jim. The Croft House, before it was built, I don't know whether you recall what was there. The Croft House was an area where the city kept all of the supplies, all of his trucks and whatever was housed where the Croft House is. I don't know who's... It's been around long enough to remember that, but that's what was housed. I lived right across the street and faced all that. So the Croft House was an improvement based on all those things that was kept fenced in,
right,
with all the trucks and everything else. So
I was old enough to remember, but I don't.
I know I date myself, but it's all right.
The language that our Supreme Court has given to us when you look at a spot zoning case, and it comes from the Knowles case, they say, hence, in reviewing spot zoning issues, upon a finding that there was, in fact, spot zoning, the appropriate analysis to closely scrutinize the following factors: the adherence of the zoning to the city's comprehensive plan and the promotion of the good of the common welfare, but to only correct injustices which are clearly shown. And clearly, zoning this property limited business would not be in keeping with the city's comprehensive plan, because you said you want it to be single-family residential, and you want to see these areas turn into single-family residential areas, and that's what you want to promote in that area, and that's what the people that did the comprehensive plan did. How that differs, I think, from the Sumter Street rezoning is, in fact, your comprehensive plan said you wanted that area to be single-family residential, even though it's already commercial. And so, to me, the analysis that the Supreme Court has told us we have to follow has said you're doing it the way the Supreme Court wants you to do it. You don't have to focus just on spot zoning to decide whether, you know, if y'all approve this on first reading and 2 weeks later we have a second reading, and if none of the neighbors show up and if none of the neighbors say we don't want this property rezoned, then nobody has given you a good reason to turn this zoning down. Chances are none of the neighbors are going to file a lawsuit against the city arguing about this being a spot zoning issue. Okay? So you do have that going for you.
But if you
decide you want to prove it.
But if I were Dr. and Mrs. Daniels, if I were the others, mm-hmm, whose request was rejected, I would file a complaint against the city. Because in the next block, we denied them that opportunity.
Well, and council has to, I'm not sure they would have a lawsuit to file against this particular rezoning. They could. But that is a fairness issue that council has to think in their own minds. When you're making a political decision, you know, is this fair to everybody? But even if you forgot for a second that spot zoning was even a legal issue, you know, your comprehensive plan has said you want this to be single-family residential.
On the next corner, Chesterfield and Abbeville, you've got a beautiful, beautiful lot there that Heights Florist wanted to build their florist there, and we rejected that. So because we're doing that to the corner on York and Abbeville, do we now look at York and Chesterfield and what happens there? Do we change the zoning there? So you're starting a whirlwind here.
Yeah. I don't think it's not a matter of spot zoning or not spot zoning. For me, it's what could go there under limited business. Now, we went over this when we had the property on is it Hayne Avenue and on Waterloo. And, you know, there's a laundry list of things that could go into limited business. And I also question, why do we have to prepare for when young life leaves? Why do we have to zone now for when young life leaves? Either you want to do it for young life for the sake of doing it for young life and the young people in that area, or you want to do it because if you get young life in there for a little while, then later on you can turn it into something else. And I think that's what we have to look at, because once it becomes something else that falls into the category of limited business, we may find that we might have done the wrong thing for the other properties along the line. Not so much because of what we haven't done in the past, but let's not look at it as a spot zoning issue. Let's just look at what are some of the things that can go there under limited business later when it becomes open, when young life is no longer there. What can happen there? And that's what we need to look at, because that's what we did on Waterloo Street.
Right.
We looked at what else could happen there when that ceases to be there. And for me, I didn't look at the spot zoning issue. I looked at the future use of having that property limited business. And I wish I had my laundry list of things that could go there now, but I don't. And perhaps the attorney can help us by providing a list of things that could go there.
I think
because that's what we need to look at.
The memo has the list.
I don't even think we need to go that far, do we? I think the question is, do we have a good enough reason? The comp plan is a guide to us, right? That we can change if we have a good reason. Now, the question to me is, do we have a good enough reason to deviate from a comprehensive plan to allow this zoning to be changed? That's the question I think we all have to ask, and I don't think we do.
Mr. Mayor, and you know, I'd be glad to take the time to go through the points.
How do you get away from this? What I've just said.
Right.
Now, I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not saying I'm perfectly right here. But to me, it's that simple. We've got a plan that dozens and dozens of people have worked on.
Right.
And we've said what we want for this area. And now we've got to decide, do we have a good enough reason to say that what we've said, we want something else. We don't want single family there. We want something else. And then we've got to think ahead with a vision, what's it going to be in the future?
Right.
You know, who's going to be coming through the door next month or so, saying, okay, you did it for them. You turned these folks down before over the years. You did it for them. Now, golly, we want to buy some of these vacant lots up here, and we want to do this, this, and this.
Right.
So, to me, it's fairly simple. I hate to disappoint. It is to me.
If we need to address all the issues right now, we will, and with your patience.
Well, it's up to council whether or not
whether to do it now
how long
or
we want to go before we vote on this issue. But
to me, we've also taken the position before that to rezone, there should be a public interest involved that we should really actually. Mm-hmm. It's even more than just consistency. I think it's very consistent if you keep the public interest thing in mind.
And I think we've proved a public interest by turning down those other things over the years. There's at least three things I think that we can all think of that have been turned down over the years, and maybe there have been more. But
The people who took the time to come to the Planning Commission, who own property across the street, you know, support this. So I think there is public good. It is, you know, what is there now certainly is having an adverse impact on the neighborhood, and it's an eyesore, and we have a plan to try to change that and move in people who will live there and who will be good additions to the neighborhood, especially in the apartments, as well as the people that will be working there. And the neighbors that have spoken have said they would welcome the change.
And I have photographs, you know, of the property to show you that. I have the zoning map to show the various uses in the area. There are all sorts of uses all around it. It is not a pure area. One of the goals for the Old Aiken District is to have mixed uses, to encourage mixed uses in some areas in these zones. That's goal number two in the Old Aiken Comprehensive Plan. And, you know, certainly along York Street at this location, one can at least argue that this is an area that would be appropriate for such limited transitional zoning, whether it's limited business or limited professional.
Did the people that supported this live in the neighborhood? They're landlords, aren't they?
There was the church members and the minister, who I think are here tonight, as well as one owner of property in the area that appeared. And of course, three of the commissioners agreed with our position based on hearing the arguments. When you get into the history of this area, it's clear in the comprehensive plan again that this is an area of mixed uses. That's what makes it historic, even though there's also a statement that there's a preference for most of the area to be single family residential. But if you look at the comprehensive plan in its totality, a proposal like this does fall within its parameters.
What does the old master plan say, Jim? Is this statement wrong that I'm reading in the memo?
No, sir, but that just takes one isolated statement out of a long plan. It also says...
Well, that's a pretty dominant statement, I would think. The old master plan, which calls for single residential detached.
Well, the same plan also calls for mixed uses in the area.
Okay. Ed Evans, would you come forward, please, and give us your wisdom on this?
The future land use map in the Old Aiken Master Plan shows this property as being detached, low-density residential. There's a map for the whole area showing land uses, and that's what's shown for this piece of property.
And that was approved by City Council?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions of Ed while he's standing up here? Okay. Ed, thank you.
Jim, can I give you another illustration, too?
Sure.
Right on the corner of Barnwell Avenue and York Street, there were two homes that sat there for the longest vacant, and the two homes were valued at $40,000. The city bought the property and ended up selling one to Mrs. Lord Kennedy, who's living there right now. And the attorney that was at Savannah Riverside purchased the other property. He later died. But Bill McGee ended up securing that property, and the house was torn down, and Bill has moved another home there. Where I'm going to with this is that there was talk about zoning those two pieces of properties residential by some folks. I'm sorry, business by some folks. So had we moved business into that block on the corner of York and Barnwell, here's another area that we could have encroached, but right now you've got the potential of two families living in those homes. So again, what looked like property that could not be repaired, was in dire need of repair, we invested $75,000 into the home. Someone purchased that property, and it's a beautiful home now. Bill is doing some upgrades to the other property, and so it'll be somebody's residence.
And I'm familiar with the property that you're referring to. It's a block or two further toward the south.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know with the other similar situations that the council's referred to, whether they were allowed to go to second reading to at least to discuss the matter, or whether they weren't given that opportunity. I have, and I'll continue to make my presentation until you tell me otherwise. This is a copy of the zoning map, in which the red is the site and the yellow are the other uses in the area. Not, these are zoning uses. It doesn't point out the fact there's a church over, you know, across the street and the Croft House and whatnot, but it shows the other zoning in the area, the other spots throughout the city where there are blocks here and there, lots here and there that are zoned differently from what's around them. Just in this area that's on this particular map, you have less than a block away at the corner, a limited professional that's at the corner of Edgefield and York Street is currently zoned limited professional. What this shows, you know, two things. One, that this type of zoning is something that is done in certain situations, even in the area that we're referring to. And that, secondly, the uses in this particular area, when you get a block or so away, are different from what's perhaps there now or what council may want there or some members of council may want there.
But when they change, and if they change, what would they be according to our comprehensive plan?
Well, they right now they are zoned, for example, limited professional, limited business.
That's right.
Unless somebody asks for it to be rezoned. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
And I assume some of these people have, you know, investments in their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be along major thoroughfares. These are photographs of the building that fronts on York, the house behind it, the lot, the Croft House across the street, the church and its offices and facilities across the street, as well as other nearby businesses within a block or so of the site. The goal 2 of the comprehensive plan on Old Aiken says promote appropriate commercial use in defined areas while encouraging mixed uses in new residential development. And it goes on to talk about some of the history of the area and the fact there's mixed uses throughout the area.
What is the limited professional at the corner of Edgefield in York? I'm trying to think.
I think it's a vacant lot at present. I think it's a vacant lot. But it's zoned limited professional.
So it's not a use at this point?
No, it's zoning.
Okay.
But they have a right tomorrow to put an office there or anything else that's allowed on a limited profession.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know the reason for this, when these neighbors met, that they asked for this, is because you can see what's going to happen if in these blocks with these multiple vacant lots, if we start doing commercial zoning, it's going to be bought up immediately for speculation. I mean, come on. People aren't going to be able to buy it to live there because it's going to be potentially commercial.
Right. Well, and I understand your point, but you can't move this block from where it is.
I know.
And it's close to things that are not appealing to people who want to have single family residence.
I have to tell you, though, when I moved into our home in 1974, someone came to a meeting just exactly like this and talked about how our street wasn't well kept and that it didn't deserve protection because of that. And we got it. We got protection from City Council, and the residential area really has grown up. Of course, it's been 30 years, but still, it made a big difference. If we hadn't gotten support from City Council, it was all over for us.
But there are transitional areas.
Sure. I know what you're saying.
Between where you are and single-family residences are and other commercial, more intense development, there's a little bit of limited profession.
But there wouldn't have been. There would not have been any. There would have been a driving bank across the street from me. There would there was
changed.
Not going to be any transition.
I understand. The lot in question is of a third of an acre, about a quarter of which is usable. about the only thing you could put there would be offices, apartments, or small, small retail shop like a gift shop or florist or something like that. It's not suitable for any intense commercial development. It's just too small based on the requirements of open space and of parking and things like that. It could just be a very limited use of any type, and office space probably is the best use of it. One thing that the comprehensive plan also calls for is to what are and to review criteria of something like this, or what are the needs for zoning in the area. There's a need for downtown office space. There really is not a lot of downtown office space, and businesses are moving out from downtown because they can't not find suitable office spaces, but especially smaller businesses, and we see that happening fairly regularly. We think that this proposal can be seen as consistent with the comprehensive plan if you look at it in its entirety. If you take out, you know, individual sections of it with regard to Old Aiken, you know, certainly that's more difficult to do. But if you look at it in its totality, the history of the area, what's there now, the flexibility that is in the comprehensive plan for Old Aiken, this type of request at this particular location is certainly reasonable, and one that we would suggest would lead to improvements in the area and remove some adverse impacts and not be detrimental to the area.
One of the things that someone could do is to take the property in question, and I think there's one or two houses in between that and the corner of Chesterfield Street, and really build 3 to 4 high-income homes just in that area. I do think it's a viable area for higher-income homes. Also, I don't know whether the property across the street at 355 York, I think it's 3 York, would be up for sale, but that's another area that would lend itself to some nice condominiums across the street. So that, just in that corner, those two corners, offers a lot of potential for some high-income residential areas in terms of either condominiums or single-family homes. So,
and I would respectfully submit, too, that improvement to that corner there as proposed would increase the likelihood of development along Abbeville back to Chesterfield. Would encourage it. Staying it like it is, or just having some, you know, inexpensive apartments there is not going to lead to improvements down the block. A use as we're proposing, for the type of people that will be owning it, managing it, and running it, would encourage development down that block. At least I think that's a reasonable expectation. Whereas if it stays like it is, or you just have a bunch of apartments there, you know, it's not necessarily going to help that area.
Jim, I'd just like to say, I agree with what you say, that that lot would be improved by anything you do, really. And it could also be a nice home there, and that would improve it, too. And that could lead to more homes going into that area as well. I mean, all of these, you make some good points, and of course, there's always another side to most of these things. But I get back to me, and I don't know how long council wants to continue discussing this issue. We need to bring a vote one way or the other, either approved or not. Yeah. But I'll get back to what I said. It's not consistent with the history that we've had over the last few years and then turning down other properties in this area. Not this lot, but other properties in a given area. And it doesn't appear to me to be consistent with what a vision is for this area as mentioned in the Old Aiken Master Plan. So therefore, I'm not in favor of it. Do we have a motion and a second?
May I just introduce... I apologize, I didn't introduce David Sachs, Trey Wolf, and David Bush with Young Life, just that they were here and took their time to do it.
Well, I love Young Life. My sisters, I didn't go through it. My sisters did. It's a wonderful organization, and I think there are other areas for it, too, other places that you can find for headquarters. This is not the only place in Aiken that this can be. Well, but that's we're here to decide not whether or not we agree to something, what's going there, but how does it relate to our plans that we've got, that people have worked on, the history that we've had over the last few years? I mean, you need to be sensitive to that, too, to what we've been through on other issues. And none of them have been easy either, because we've gone through the same kind of discussion. But when you get down to what the plan says and what our future vision is for that area, to me it would be mostly residential. And if you look at this, sure, there's some zoning here, yellow dots.
Yes, sir.
But there's more residential area in this piece of paper than there are others. So, but it's up to council.
And, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, in compliance with the consistency of the comprehensive plan, and based on this request, I am making a motion to deny the request to rezone this property at 405 York Street.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and second. Any discussion? Further discussion? If not, show hands, please, to all approval of the denial of this request. It's denied unanimously. Thank you for your time and your thoughts. And sometimes these decisions are tougher than others. Okay, going to item four, first reading of an ordinance to amend the franchise agreement for towing vehicles.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, let me read this by title. It's an ordinance adding language to the City of Aiken franchise agreement under Section 4211 of the Aiken City Code regarding personal items left in certain towed vehicles. If you recall, we had a long discussion with our individuals that do towing. Now, this is only when there's an accident or a vehicle gets disabled and the person doesn't know who to tow, and therefore then we have a list of individuals that are on this towing list that we would then call. If you as an individual wanted to have your vehicle towed, you could have it towed by anybody you want to. But those that are on our list have in a contract with us, and one of the things that has come up on more than one occasion, and we've got complaints from citizens, is that when they have a breakdown or if there's an accident and they need to get back their vehicle, because again, when you have an accident or there's a breakdown, a lot of times you're in a panic state and you're not really thinking rationally, and they leave something in the car. It could be their tools that they use for work, it could be medicine, it could even we've had car seats left in there for infants. And when you go back to the towing company, if you don't have the money right away to pay for it, they'll say, in many cases, you can't get into that vehicle. It's our vehicle until you pay us the money. We feel that needs to be changed. We checked with the highway department. They do have a clause, a paragraph in there that says that the individual has the right to retrieve personal belongings from those vehicles. We'd like to add that into our contract. If you approve this on first read tonight, we'll contact all the towing companies in case they want to come down and speak on this issue before the second reading. But we are suggesting that we go ahead and put that paragraph in there. And so for tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to amend our franchise agreement with towing companies regarding personal items left in the towed vehicle.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move for approval of this ordinance on first reading.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Pass this unanimously. Item 5, first reading of an ordinance to approve the North Side Comprehensive Plan. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. This is a rather thick document that you have in front of you.
Yeah.
A lot of hard work went into this. We've been discussing this for at least 3 years. For the first couple years, we tried to convince the county to work with us and to be a partner in this. They decided not to do that. James Holland, who is the chair of this, has worked very diligently with a committee to look at the entire north side. If you look at the area that we reviewed, it's primarily between York Street or Route 1 and 19 to I-20. Now, it does go beyond that in many areas. And most of the area that the comprehensive plan that we're asking to approve tonight
shows for residential and a lot of open space. I know there's been questions from several of you in the past, well, how does this compare with the county? And currently the county has a land management plan for this area, but it lacks a lot of the details that our comprehensive plan says we would like to see for this area. And it's just like this other issue, what happened on York Street. Decisions that you make today for this particular area is what it's going to be like in the future. And we feel that the blueprint that you have in front of you for the north side is something that we could expect will occur. I mean, it's not going to occur tonight. It's not going to occur 5 years from now. But 10 to 20 years from now, you'll see this plan really taking focus and shape. Just like I really believe the Old Aiken Master Plan, most of the area is multifamily. But you'll see over a period of time the Robert Stacks and others coming to you and saying, we want to rezone this to single family. And that's our goal. So there's a lot of goals that are in here. A lot of hard work went into this. We did have a few people that lived outside the city that were on this task force. And so, you know, I compliment them. And we are asking that you adopt this and that we have the second reading public hearing at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I move for approval of this on this first reading.
Okay.
We approve the north side comprehensive plan.
All right. All right. I'll second it. Any discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Why don't we stick this in our car so Sarah doesn't have to print this all up
exactly
again for
right.
the next meeting?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
If I don't ever take it in.
You save, what, a couple bucks?
A tree or two.
Actually, yeah.
A few trees.
We'll hold on to it, Sarah.
You're right.
We'll hold on to it, Sarah.
Yeah, we'll hold on.
Just thank you.
Just a reminder, bring your first reading.
I have to write it down because I won't.
Yeah. Item 7
put a reminder.
Item 7's resolution accepting a deed of dedication for Sable Chase. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this is a deed of dedication. Sable Chase Development is a single-family development right off of Two Notch Road near Price Avenue. There's 32 homes in there. Most of them are already occupied. The engineering department has reviewed all the utilities, made an inspection of this in the last few weeks, and are recommending that City Council accept this deed of dedication for this development, which would include the water, sewer, storm drainage, and streets. Now, if we had in place already the engineering of record, they would have gone ahead, made the inspections, but before we would have recommended this for City Council to accept, we would have still asked our engineering department to go out there and to double check and make sure that everything was according to the final plats and other items that you will be receiving. So we'll still always be coming back to you and making that last final check, making sure those roads don't have dips in it or curbs broken or anything else. So there's always that a safety valve, so to speak, that you'll have. We just will not be out there inspecting it during the construction phase. So for your consideration tonight, this is acceptance of the deed of dedication for Sable Chase Subdivision.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just have one question. I guess it's a learning question, so bear with me. In the ordinance itself, in the third paragraph, we say that the City of Aiken has concluded that acceptance of this right-of-way and these utilities is essential to the general health, safety, welfare, and economic stability of the city and is in the best interest of its citizens. Is that one of these motherhood state-required statements?
You will see that in every ordinance and resolution that you ever see.
Okay, well, I won't ask that question again.
And the reason it's in there is because our Supreme Court has said that's what you have to do in order to pass an ordinance, that you have to find that it does all that.
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
Can I ask you that?
Okay. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. All right. Petitions and requests. December meeting schedule.
Yes, we'd like to recommend that we not meet on the second meeting in December, which is December 24th. And I especially ask that I be home that night.
Oh, come on.
Bah humbug, you know. So we'd like to cancel this. If some issue would come up that's a very important nature, we could always find and schedule another meeting date.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay. All in favor? Is there any discussion first?
Get to see Santa Claus without a meeting.
Huh?
How are we going to get to see Santa Claus without a meeting on the 24th?
It passes unanimously.
Yeah, we duly noted that some of you really would prefer to meet that night, so we'll consider that next time.
Okay, we've added two items. Approval of the two-hour parking is the next item.
Council did hear at the work session the recommendation by the Downtown Parking Committee, which is to limit parking on Lawrence and Richland on both sides and the median to 2 hours from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and on the other streets of Pendleton, Park Avenue, Newberry, Barnwell, wherever you face a business, that those would also be 2 hour limit from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. By you approving this, we will go ahead and move forward with public safety and our engineering department to go ahead and start putting the necessary signage, but more importantly, start the educational program that will be necessary with the merchants, especially, but also the patrons for that area. So we are asking tonight to go ahead and approve that two-hour limit as just proposed.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
I move that we approve this first reading. Or it's not really first reading, is it?
No. This is just passed. Approved.
We pass it. We approve it.
Second.
Okay. We have a second also. Any discussion?
Wanted to know if we could call the Aiken Standard at least on that, because she's gone already.
Now, we will go ahead and get articles in the Standard, and we'll also put it in our newsletter.
Okay.
We will, more than likely, it's going to be several months before we go ahead and start actually giving fines and tickets. We'll be giving courtesy tickets and doing more notification the first few months than anything.
Roger, I'd like to thank the committee for taking into consideration enlarging this area. My concern initially was that doing it in just the smaller area, we were going to drive long-term parkers just a little further out in front of other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we have an open mind that this area can be enlarged so that we're not just moving those long-term parkers from in front of one business and placing them in front of another. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to thank them for that.
Very good.
Can I park on the side of your building now?
Oh, absolutely.
Just, but you have to get there real early to do that.
In the median, you're fine.
And just adding on, just from all of us, thank the committee, please, for the work they've done. There's no doubt this has been a long-term thing, and they've worked hard, and we're going to see how this works.
Sure does take you a long time, Wayne. 30 years.
You probably said the same thing back there, Wayne, 30 years ago. This is the way you do it. Okay. All right. Any comments? Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Jane, you want to discuss?
Well, I kind of already did.
Here we go. You already did.
I'm just worried about it. I really do. I mean, while if we want to protect residential neighborhoods, but boy, when it's not residential and it's business, we want businesses to be there. And I just really worry when I see the county, this is the county seat, for goodness sakes, and I see the county talking about needing 25 to 50 acres so they can have their campus out on the bypass somewhere. And they said this young lady that I spoke with, Debbie Pearson, said in the procurement office, said that they were considering anything within 3 miles of the current complex, which is... I live near this, and I watch a lot of people walk to the health department there. I watch a lot of people walk to pay their bills there. I don't see why we would need 1,000 parking places. I just can't understand that at all.
Jane, if they put it far enough out, everybody would have to drive.
Drive, I guess so. That's a good point. Nobody could go without a car, so there we are again.
That's the worst part of the whole thing. Oh, that's one of the worst. Everybody's got to get there by vehicle of some sort.
Everybody. And then what scared me too was she said, oh, yeah, and then, you know, we need all this space because if the judicial center moves out, and that means the courthouse. And that's important to our downtown, hugely important. So I just wondered at what point in time, I mean, they've already gotten the needs assessment, a space. And now they're supposed to be getting the firm to identify the location. And I'll be honest with you, I tried to get somebody that knew about old buildings because I think it's important while you're thinking of building a building to look at what you've got and see if it's irredeemable mm-hmm. or if it isn't. And I see a lot of space behind that old hospital. One person said to me, well, build in the parking lot in front of it and then tear the hospital down and have all that behind it for parking. I mean, there are a lot of creative options that I don't see being mentioned. And I just don't want to be, frankly, I'm just as concerned about it as a county taxpayer as I am as a member of Aiken City Council.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the old Cameo Hill location? That's out of the window?
Well, they had part of their business there.
That plan, they still do.
That would have been the pace to acquire to build the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It would have.
It makes a lot more sense for the city to do it there than out in Mr. Wyatt's property out there.
Or out way on any bypass around town.
They're offering to give the land for the Wyatt property.
Well, there was a Rutland Drive proposal as well.
Correct. There is. I just think before we give up a major, I just don't think towns stay viable if there aren't real businesses in them.
Just to clear it in my mind, the meeting tomorrow is to select or to approve a certain.
Well, it's very vague.
Consultant or what?
She said, well, I think tomorrow night they're going to approve the firm that's going to pick the site, that's going to suggest the best site. And I said, well, I know this particular group that I know of sent you the information and never got any material back. And she said, oh, well, they're all architects. We need engineers. Well, you know, the design of the building has a lot to do with the site. I mean, this is all a thing that works together, and this particular firm did have engineers. So I have a particular quarrel with that. That's just me, because I don't understand how somebody's picking and choosing. You know, let them give you their qualifications. If you don't like them, then ignore it, you know. But as a member of council, I am really worried about this project. I really am.
Are you going to go tomorrow night and sit
Yes,
in?
I am. I just wanted you to know. I just was curious as how y'all felt about it. You know what I mean.
I don't like the idea of them being that far out. I mean, if you want my opinion,
I do.
Same reasons. Everybody's got to drive out there somehow. I don't see anybody walking out there, if it's there. But now, it hadn't been decided for sure, although the land does appear to be free. But they haven't made a decision yet.
No, in fact, they rejected, you know, Fine and Deering were not asked to pick a site. They were asked to pick to do the space assessment, right?
Right.
And then they picked the site, just as a little lanyap at the end, and the council said, excuse us, we didn't ask you to do that. We're going to get another firm, an out-of-town firm.
And supposedly, then, that's what this firm is supposed to do. They're supposed to make their own study and then recommend.
But when I talked to Debbie Pearson, I said, she said, we're not looking at anything less than 25 acres. Well.
And that's based on the needs assessment, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And the only place, she was joking now. Now, she was joking. She said, the only place we could get that in the City of Aiken is Hitchcock Woods. And she was kidding. I know. But anyway, she was kidding.
The border's gone.
But the point is, I mean, to me, it's like what happened when they said, you know, you can't build a school unless you have 20 acres, so every school goes out of the middle of town. And I just think that I think that the county taxpayers need to know what this project, what the projected costs of this project are. I think we as council members of the city of Aiken need to express real concern about losing this activity from the center of our town.
Yeah. I think we ought to talk, depending on how we feel about it individually, we ought to talk to
Is that all right? Then you won't get mad at me if I say something on my own?
We could talk to our own representatives in our district.
Well, that's right.
About that. The council members.
I called my
representative. Does this not concern us enough to... Is this not one of those issues that requires us to sit and meet with them?
Well, we don't know much more than what you've said.
I know.
I'm glad you told us what you told us.
And I don't know whether Calmia Plaza is off the list, on the list.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think that's maybe step two or three or something.
I guess that's my point, Mayor, is that we don't know, and it is one of those things that we do need to say, let's tell us what you...
Now would be a good time to contact our representatives and say, look, we're afraid here this might happen, and we don't think it's the right thing.
Well, if we don't, individually.
Yeah.
I just think that they don't like us telling them...
Well, that's where I was going to get
what
to.
...what they can do or cannot do. But if we talk with them from body to body, you know, that it might...
Yeah.
B, we'll get more facts and we'll have a better understanding for what their problems might be versus...
I'm just thinking, as a body, we can certainly let them know of our concern about the impact of their future building on the downtown Aiken business community. I mean, I agree that we'd like to keep the county building where it is. That said, I'm embarrassed at the quality of county buildings throughout the county. They're just an absolute mess.
They are.
I'm delighted to see them taking a positive step, but as a body, couldn't we say we'd at least express the concern we have about the impact of their location on the effect of the downtown business?
I think maybe we should wait till this meeting's over if they haven't even selected a firm yet. What are others saying?
Let's do a little more research.
Well, I think we need a little bit more research.
It's very confusing. And, of course, I have to tell you, Roger knows this. I can't even tell what they're voting on in county meetings 90% of the time. Those meetings are, you know the way they vote. Let's take 60 proposals here and let's pass them and whatever. And you're going, huh? And I am, anyway. I don't know what they're doing. So I don't know. I just think
Why don't we plan to talk about this at our next meeting? We've got another meeting coming up in December. We'll gather information in the meantime, and we can individually go ahead and do what we want to do individually, but then we can come together at a next meeting. As a matter of fact, we might even have an agenda item.
But she virtually promised me that they're not looking at anything less than 25 acres, so that pretty much tells you there's nothing.
Would you agree to have that as an agenda item next meeting?
And ask the chairman to discuss the status.
Well, we could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know him real well.
I would love to do that.
You know,
you
I just
so?
Don't.
Well, let's do that because we are interested. Ask Ronnie to come and give us a report.
I don't want to make him mad, but you know, at the same time.
No, I think it's a legitimate interest, a legitimate concern.
Why don't I do this? I'll ask Clay to get me something in writing as to where they're at and what steps they're going to be taking in the near future. I do know that they have narrowed down, of the sites that they looked at so far, two on the bypass and one was the Fine Deering site. That the Calmia site, they had several problems with it, mainly the size, especially now that the old Belk's building is being utilized by a call center.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. And so they got a couple hundred people in there working right now. And so once the Belk side came out of the equation, then there was another reason why. They're also looking at tax credits in certain areas on the bypass,
right,
because of the economic level of what's happening out there, they could apply for certain tax credits to go ahead and buy that property at a much lower rate. They've pretty well taken the fine dealing side out because of everything you said with the amount of grading that would have to be done. Literally, as you come down the road going into the Sage Trolley Run Station, you'd be seeing the top of a four-story building, yeah, and you wouldn't see the bottom of it till you went around the road and went interior to the area, and they feel there's a lot of problems, but they have not selected a site. They're not close to selecting a site, but they're getting a lot closer. And something we've done relatively soon, the big thing is going to be, even once they select a site, is where's the money going to come from, you know, to pay for this? Because mm-hmm. now they're talking $25, $30, $35 million, and they have only a portion of that in the 1 cent sales tax.
They have 12, and I said, I heard 80. She said, oh, I heard more than that.
I have not heard that high, but I will.
I mean, that's just talk. That's just one phone conversation.
Play that you can look at.
It's called the empowerment zone.
Based on that, we could decide at the next meeting where you'd like to go with it.
That's good.
Okay, good idea.
Thanks.
Okay, we need to go to executive session. If everyone agrees, for a personnel issue and also a potential contractual issue. And we've got a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We got a second. All in favor? Okay, everybody agrees? Mm-hmm. Beverly, you agree?
Yeah, I do.
We have
everybody.
Like 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Unanimous.
Please, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That should be good. All those children agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.